Welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Colin.
Alright guys, we got Colin back, and we got him back for a very special episode. We're going to talk about Circle, with its many bandwagon birds and cannibalist instincts, and general speaking, random jank.
And Christmas.
Again.
Yes. Circle Christmas is eternal.
I guess it is Circle Christmas.
It is always Circle Christmas, with a brief pause for, like, the last
Thanks,
year.
Circle Christmas.
Apparently it wasn't until...
It all averages out.
In Europe it was always Circle Christmas.
In Europe it's always Circle Christmas. Here in the Southern Hemisphere, though, it wasn't, and in North America, well, they apparently needed a big, dumb bandwagon bird to get them back on the Christmas train.
That was clearly the thing that got them back on.
It wasn't at all the Tharn.
Or the Lord of the Feast.
Fuck that guy.
Or the Century Stones.
Fuck that guy.
Or Kruger.
Century Stones have been out since the beginning of Mark III. They were always
dumb. The reason Bones was decent all the time.
Yeah,
that's what kept them in the meta.
Once it got a bit of a buff, Bones was good.
Yes.
And Bones is still good.
Yeah, Bones is fine.
Speaking of Bones... Shall we talk about the theme forces? And speaking of which, shall we lead off with Bones? And completely flag-rating my order, but I like the freaking same way we had going, so...
Okay.
Well, we're going to do it in alphabetical order now.
So, Bones of Orboros.
This is the Wold theme. If you like Wold...
If you like rocks...
This is the theme you have to play, because you can only play them in two themes, this theme and Secret Masters. I don't think you can play them in...
You can play them in the...
Can you play them in Wild Hunt?
You can play them in Wild Hunt. You actually only can't play them in Devourers and
Fall of
the
Wild. I have played them in Wild Hunt. Yep. So, yeah. Okay.
That's because it's silly to have a rock monster eat people.
I mean...
Or it was, when that was a rule.
Hey, we had a podcast dedicated to
Do they still have snacking, the Warbeasts?
No.
I thought they changed that.
No, that's true. They don't have snacking.
They don't
Before,
have
you could technically get Megalith in that list.
There was nothing technical about it.
And you just shoved something in its face region until there was a bloody smear.
Because, like, that was what they were made with, was blood and stone and wood. And
all
so
you can
they
see
just refreshed the blood.
He just rings out a troll, like a towel, and just bathes in it.
That's what I've always found weirdest about snacking, is that there's no, like, distinction between base sizes. So for Salvage, the rule that Crix has, you got different tokens depending on how big the thing was that broke, which made sense. But in snacking, you, like, eat a teensy tiny thing, and you get exactly the same health back as
explain how this works.
Fucking Diatroll.
Because
you don't have time to eat the whole thing.
No, here's the thing. Snacking is a troll roll, and your dumb Mechanithrall thing, Necrotech is a Crix roll. Those are the differences. So anyway.
And then everyone stole it from trolls.
Bones of Orboros. If you look at the WTC, Bones of Orboros is basically the only theme anyone is playing apart from random jank.
Well, was.
It was the only thing.
And it is a good thing. It's not my favourite theme on account of the fact that it favours casters that I'm not a massive fan of playing, not because they're not good, just I don't really enjoy playing them and I can't explain why.
Yeah, that's
But quite commonly it is played with Kruger, quite commonly it was played with Cassius, although I suspect now you can argue between the two.
Mm-hmm. Baldur 2?
Yeah, it was played with Baldur 2 quite a lot. The Baldur 2 version is pretty straightforward.
Yep.
With Kruger, you get a lot of options to play around and a lot of things you can do that you just can't do with Baldur 2.
And finally, of course, you can play with Bradagus, because Bradagus is basically belongs to that thing.
You can. In fact, that is almost the only thing you can really realistically play him with.
I think that the big thing with Bones is that you're not going to get the raw numbers that you'll get from some other theme. Like, if you try and compare, like, Wolds to, like, random heavies, unless you're playing Brad.
So I think, I think you're wrong. Because when they did the update to Wolds, they buffed the base power on all of them, and then they gave you a solo that gave you plus two.
Yeah.
So you can now get Wold Guardians up to power 23 with various casters. So
you mean,
like,
Brad, but...
No. You can get them up to 20... Sorry, hang on, are they 18 base? I think they're 18 base now, so they're 20 base without a caster buff. So they're 22 with Baldur 1, they're 22 with Cassius, they're 22 with Mosa, they're 22 with, like, bunches of casters.
Yes.
And 23 with Brad.
And 23 with Brad.
No, she doesn't have a damage buff.
Yeah.
Only the feet.
Works on Tharn.
Yeah,
only works on Tharn. Anyhow.
So, yeah, you can play high damage output with Wolves now. Their problem has always been getting them to the thing that you're trying to punch, and that hasn't really changed. Wold Weirds are still very good, and they've been very good for quite a while now, which is something that those who played in Mark II will find really weird, so to speak. But I think Bones, I think, has been talked about a lot in the last year and a half, because it's realistically the only theme that people could play properly.
It was also the only thing that really had depth, because there's a lot of depth to the wards themselves, and it's probably one of the reasons why I think a lot of people like that list. Actually, it's one of those lists where you can just knock all down and play the same, exact same list over and over.
Sure.
And with different casters.
Not even different casters, it's the same caster. Just figure out your way through different
planes. Yes, but the fact that some of the wards can cast the spells of whatever's on their... A caster's card with some restrictions
will change the theme.
Changes how a list will play entirely. So if you take it with Kruger, it means you have fucking TKs for days all over the place.
Gallows.
Or you have Hellmouth. You can't Hellmouth, but you can Curse of Shadows.
No, you can't Curse of Shadows.
Stranglehold.
It's Stranglehold.
That's fine. Yes.
You can depend on Stranglehold.
Stranglehold's a pretty good one. Can you do any of like the Trigger Lightning ones?
Earth Spikes. There's a few that you can cast.
Morv 1's are weird.
Notably, Baldur 2 you can cast Roots of the Earth.
And Morv 1 is an amusing one, because now she can also get Mortality.
But I mean, just the fact that like you have like mobile arc nodes that are sort of independent of the Warcaster is like disgusting.
It
changes up the way that entire list plays, because you have way more access to spells than most people have.
And to me, that's the thing. Your stats on Worlds are still under average, like Wald Wardens are one less armor than they probably should be, because they're only armor 18. Wald Guardians.
Power is probably one less than it would be if they didn't have Geomancy.
Wald Guardians are one less speed than they probably want to be, and one less defense, so it's not really relevant.
They're almost a normal heavy.
Wald Guardians are basically, when they did the buffs.
Probably one less point cost then than what they want to be.
When they did the buffs and gave them a decent stat total, so they're 34-35 boxes instead of 30.
Yep.
And they've got Shield Guard, and they do all their things. Like, Wall Guardians are a good beast now.
I think
and
so.
And Wall Wardens are a good beast now.
I agree.
They're both reasonably expensive,
and they
compared
do different
to some of the things that are available.
Also, Mega Man.
They have very different roles, which means you have different reasons to take them.
Plus,
you don't see more or less of them.
We can't forget the elephant in the room. The two Sentry Stones.
Yeah.
The whole reason you realistically want to play Bones...
It's so you can have a forest cloud wall, so it's better than any cloud wall that exists.
You mean a forest cloud wall spray
boosted
spray, boosted spray infantry answer?
Yep.
Semi recursion.
Sentry stones remain in the same category as hellmouths, as units that are just uniquely weird and not fair at the price that they pay.
You very much need to have an answer going into bones to sentry stones, one way or another,
or a very good understanding of how they play.
Exactly.
Yep.
You can play around them a little bit better than you can play around Hellmouths. Hellmouths have a kind of gear check element to them that's interesting.
Hellmouths have,
really
like,
have
stats.
Yes.
Hellmouths can't move, and Sentry Stones can.
The pull part of Hellmouths is very similar to being able to play around Sentry Stones in that context. It's just that Hellmouths are significantly harder to kill, but Sentry Stones are mobile.
Yes.
And Sentry Stones are a great unit.
They're fucking
I have never made a bones list that doesn't have two Sentry Stones.
So in conclusion, worst comes to worst, play Bones as one of your offs. It pairs very nicely with any of the other themes, especially the primary theme. Now, next we'd probably go, in order on War Room, it'd be Devourer's Host, but we'll cover that next.
We're doing alphabetical.
Well, alphabetical then, I guess, is Call of the Wild.
Yeah!
Then Devourer's Host is third.
Yeah, I'm not covering
leaving it last.
Yeah.
So we'll go alphabetical this way, and then we'll switch it up.
Yes.
Sure. Oh, yeah, we'll just spin the wheel of which way we're going to go.
This is why we're chaotic
and go reverse alphabetically for the rest of the list.
Yes. That's why we're chaotic good.
So Call of the Wild...
We're just chaotic. Let's not beat around the bush. We're probably not that good.
Call of the Wild. That's
true.
The Living Beast theme. It is a theme that everybody wanted to be good and then just wasn't for a good
Most people
couple of years.
Want their... Like their Jack/Beast list to be good,
and it's hard. And for Circle players, it was a big deal because Wolves were something that got a lot of players into Circle. Like the Beasts of Circle were something that people saw as their.
Yes,
I would say that's the rule for most factions, though. I would say a lot of people usually identify with the Jacks because they're almost as iconic as the Warcasters they used to advertise them.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone, like, that's why Cato became such a big deal in Mark III, because suddenly the Jacks were worth playing, where in Mark II they were always, like, the thing that got people into the faction, and then they were told to drop them and play other stuff.
25-30 infantry.
Yes.
Or 40 infantry.
And people either did it, or they got over it, or they didn't. And
yes. Struggled. Yeah, so Call of the Wild is now a playable thing. There are a variety of casters you can play it with. I don't personally think it is the best option available to you as a Circle player, but it is a good option, and you can certainly play it. There are a huge number of casters you can play it in. Chromak 2 is always a favourite because everybody really wants him to be good because he looks cool and he's big and chunky.
He has well-drawn abs.
He does. I think Chromak 1 is Kaya, a better Kaya caster. I like Chromak 1. Kaya 2 and Kaya 3 are both very playable in this theme. Una 2 is playable in this theme. There is no Una 1.
There's no Una 1. Una 1 is definitely playable in this theme. I've definitely seen Una 1 in this theme.
I think you could play...
She's how you get your...
...for most of the other casters if you really wanted to, but I think those are the primary ones for Call of the Wild. Chromak 2 does it well. The recent changes to the cast to the beasts dropped the cost on a bunch of the heavies, made the goats usable and decent. Not and great, but they're decent. And made the Stalker got a buff because...
Stalker!
And more importantly...
Because it has the same name as the Krex model.
And Getarix became better.
Yes, significantly better. And more importantly...
Stupidly better.
The Storm Raptor, i.e. the Meme Raptor, yes. got...
The Derpy Turkey.
Better-ish.
Derpy Turkey.
I love Derpy that name. Turkey.
But now we have...
I like Velociraptor. That's also Zapter. Nobody's ever taken it up.
Yeah, that's so, right. too cool.
Yeah, it's too long.
Yeah. Velociraptor. No.
People don't want to call the Derby Turkey something good.
Because I feel like if you call it the Velociraptor, then whenever it does something awesome, you can always look at the camera and go, clever girl.
I think Meme Raptor is probably the one that's going to stick long term.
Or Bandwagon Bird. As it has to be known, Bandwagon Bird.
I think it'll be forever the Meme Raptor.
The important thing with this theme is that it gives you one less cost on your Animi, so a bunch of Animi just become free, and a couple of other ones, like, say, Superconductor on the Meme Raptor,
become... All of them become usable, which is a really nice touch, because there's a lot of Animi in the game where you're like, I can use my Animi, and then I don't get to make attacks. Yep. Fuck.
Pretty much.
So there is one thing that someone's pointed out that makes me laugh, is this theme kind of fucks with the Battlebox caster?
Oh, yeah, fucks with Tanith, it's so hilarious. Does.
And they'll never change Tanith. No.
No, not for a little while. She might get some love if Secret Masters comes up.
I don't think they'll ever change a Battlebox caster because they're in the Battlebox.
Maybe.
Well,
I hope they do. She could do with a couple of tunes. She's not bad. She's just not quite there.
She doesn't take models that are really in vogue. She's kind of out of season.
Yeah, there's a bit of that.
So, anyhow, yes. Call of the Wild is... playable, definitely. To me, Una 2 is like the standout here, and then there's a couple others who also show up in Chromak 2 as well for very similar reasons.
I think if you are a new player to Circle and you want to play Beasts, you're going to play Call of the Wild, and you're probably going to play either lots of little Beasts with Una 2, or lots of medium Beasts with Kaya 3, or lots of big Beasts with Chromak 2.
Yep.
I think that's the three kind of medium beasts. So that would be the goats and cheap heavies. So Kaya 3 really likes... She also likes lights, but if you're playing lights, then I think, like, you might as well be playing Una.
So if you want to play lights, you play Una. If you want to play cheap spam...
If you
want to play
goats and, like, stuff...
You play
like
Kaya 3 stuff, because Kaya 3 she has synergy.
Because she gives it a bit of everything.
Yeah,
sure. And then if you want to play heavies, like three or four heavies...
If ever made
lights,
the Argus
then Chromak 2 is good because Getarix is a fucking monster in that list.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Getarix is dumb!
Like, Getarix probably hard carries your game in 20 or 30% of games for that list.
Yep.
Because you put him forward on the important turn under Chromak's feet, and he's, like, effectively armor 23.
What's his bond with Chromak?
Overtake.
That's not a bad bond.
No, it's a pretty good bond.
It's a pretty good bond.
That's not a bad bond.
He's got Warp Murderous. So yes, if you hit him in
Chromak's he's also got...
And you've got Carnage.
You've got Carnage as well. You've got a lot.
It's just, you don't have to Gorax him, so he doesn't need Primal to be able to kill shit.
If he does get Primal.
Up everything.
Yes, and if he does get Primal, that's all that.
And the Stalker getting plus one POW is actually relevant as well.
Yep.
Particularly in lists where you have a mat buff, so Chromak 2 is a good example of that.
Alright, let's move on briefly to...
It was briefly.
Okay, well, that was not briefly, but fair enough. The Wild Hunt.
Wild Hunt, I liked this theme for one caster, and everyone can guess which caster... but now there is a better theme for casters, so...
It's Mosa, right? Oh.
It's always Grail.
It's always Grail for Wild Hunt.
But Wild Hunt has the best solo. The Wolf.
Yes, and that model triggers it.
Yeah, because that model...
Wild Hunt has one draw card, which is just the Warwolf, which is a broken-as-shit model. And unfortunately for it, the rest of the theme sucks balls. So this advisedly, don't buy Warpborn Skinwalkers unless you think there is a CRD coming for that theme. if you're a new player. If you already own them, then they are playable. They're just not good.
There's going to be a lot of them around because they're part of the two-player battle box. They're physically, like, they're good models. Yeah,
they're cool models.
So people want to play them.
Bad. They're just not anywhere near as good.
Well, I mean, even in Mark 2, they were great. Then they got fixed, and now they're bad to being bad. And
they got drilled. At the end of
that, like, thank you, Nirvana, too.
Oh, yeah. So, whose fault was that?
That would be someone else.
That would definitely be someone else, and definitely someone not at this table. It's probably my fault. That's fine.
Yeah. You shouldn't have spammed them with Kator.
I really shouldn't have.
This theme is an interesting theme in some ways. It has Reaves in it, and Reaves are a unique unit in the way they play on the table because they're power 8, which is really low, but they have a lot of attacks.
That's a very marked beginning of Mark 3 feeling right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, so they're decent.
If they got brought out now, they would have been Tau 10 easily.
I still remember getting, like, a Karcher of Affliction by Reeves and getting shot by a bunch of them, and then it was a whole bunch of stuff going on. I knew that was the name of the game, so I spent the entire game pruning Reeves.
So basically, the Affliction build with Tanith is one of the only ones where I've seen Reeves be particularly useful. You can play Reeves and do two power 18s. Like, that's not terrible.
No, that's not bad.
It's okay.
Throwing a damage off is power 20, right?
Sure. Cool. Two power 20s is decent, right? Yes. But that means that you put 10 dudes that are 13-13 in front of their entire army in range to shoot it. And you don't have snipe, so you are within 12 inches, so you are probably losing most of your Reeves the next turn.
They're range 12.
Yeah.
Their crossbows are longer range than its guns.
You do have a go to ground on the unit leader, like the UA, so you can do the, hooray, we shot something and then we all hide and hope like hell we don't all die.
Yeah.
So they're Idrians, but not as good.
Nowhere near as good as Idrians. They are not in the same conversation as Idrians. No, they're not.
No.
So, Affliction is the only thing I know of that makes them good. The Reef Hunter is an interesting model. He hasn't changed since Mark 3 started, so if you can go back and listen to a review of Mark 3, you'll hear what the Reef Hunter does. But he has Weapon Master on his melee attack, which is weird. He has two attacks with his gun, and he's reasonably accurate, which makes him good for triggering the Warwolves, and pretty shit for almost everything else, other than being a solo that hangs out and does stuff.
Scores points!
The primary use I find of... The primary thing that's happened to Wolves... Wild Hunt, since its release, and honestly since the last CID, is that you now have the Well of Orboros, the thing that summons in solos, and you being able to summon in a Warwolf...
An additional Warwolf. For the cheap cost of 26 points.
Does that mean if you play Grail...
Yes.
And a well. You can have a werewolf in any list.
Yeah! I've always made it worth it. I've thought about it several times. It's almost worth it. He also really wants a gallows grove.
It's actually hilarious as well because
you can already have that in your list. Yeah. So the werewolf is just a bonus. So
one of the cool things for werewolves is they trigger on any attack from a wolf swarm that hits. So you can trigger them off gallows from Grail himself.
Really?
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
See, that's why it's worth bringing a well with Grail.
Well, I know the other reason why you bring in a well and you bring in werewolves. By the way, this circle cast is generated real quickly.
Grail.
Werewolves are cool.
Werewolves jump out of the well, and then on the turn they jump out, normally they wouldn't be able to charge and stuff, but that doesn't matter because wolves' rules are fucking stupid. So they can, like, jump out of the well, then walk or run or whatever into position, and then just go and charge something and be
I've
very,
seen
very
nothing
accurate.
Wrong with this at all. I feel really like cool. We should do this.
What was it called?
This has to happen.
The rest of the theme, it's already happened. The rest of the theme.
That's why we invited him on.
Wolves of Orboros are okay. They're not.
They pierce the thickest armor.
They do. If you put all 10 of them into something that has armor less than 23, you will definitely do damage.
I guess that is the letter of the law. I mean, not necessarily the spirit.
They didn't say they'd do it more than once. They just said they wouldn't pierce it. If you mini-feet and CMA with the whole unit into something, you will almost certainly pierce it. You probably won't kill it, but you'll definitely do it. Yeah, so look, starting at power 9 is not great. That's not news to anyone. They are, however, range 2, which is decent, and they do have a cheap cost, which is okay. You can spam lots of them if you want to. There probably are builds that, if you're a good player, you could play with lots and lots of wolves that would be okay on scenario.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to personally, but you can. You get an ambushing unit as part of that theme. And the ambushing unit isn't terrible. And if you want to play the Mos Armeem that we'll probably also talk about in Devourer's Host.
You can also take Death Wolves, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So that's also another good unit. So you have a good unit and a good soul. But you don't have
any way to give them corpses unless you also bring a pot.
Well, that's also a good unit.
General rule, if you are a circle player and you want to play Devourer's Host or Death Wolves in any list, buy yourself the pot from the Croc team.
Or make one.
Cauldron and Boil Master.
Or do a Frolly and make one.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's actually really nice.
Alternately, if you want to, you can use the well. I wish you luck. I think there are games where it will be really good for you and games where it won't. In Wild Hunt, you can use the well because you can bring yourself a unit of shit that you don't care about and then shoot it with your own well. And that will fill your death walls.
Yes, because Wild Hunt has the most garbage per capita of it any does. Of the circle lists.
So you could buy one min unit of wolves for 6 points and just sit them next to them and just wait for the turn that you want six corpses and just go, blah!
Speaking of garbage per capita, we'll next get into the next list, which is Secret Monsters.
Yeah, it's the Minions theme.
Yeah, totally.
Colin, this is
your jam.
Your jam.
So... there is one list in this theme that I like, which Tom Gwan played and did quite well with.
Before, after the before the change.
Before oh. the bird.
No, that the bird. The change. Bird
was
in it,
but the change was... So, you can make a couple of lists with Secret Masters that are decent. The change to the bird has, inexplicably to me, but made Secret Masters appealing to some. I think... the changes to Mulvina 1 mean that you could probably play her in Secret Masters if you want. The appeal of this theme is basically you get cool druidy dudes who people like. You get access to both wolves and living things if you want, which is cool. And you, other than that, can play a minion unit or two if you really want. And that's okay.
That's not quite true. Now they've lifted the cap on the minion units. You can play as many of them as you want.
Or two.
Or X. I'm assuming there
are... what are you going to play?
Valkyries.
Triple Valkyries, yes.
With who?
Gator Posse.
No.
So not Gator Posse, I meant the Gator Alexia.
So here's the thing, right? Gator Posse are good in the Gatorman.
No, that's what I said. I didn't mean Gator Posse. I literally meant Corporal Alexia. Shambles.
Right, and yeah, you only want one of them. Because you don't have enough corpses for two of them. So I agree. You can play one or two units of minions if you want. You could play Croak Raiders.
Hey.
With Morvana 1, Mortality Croak Raider, can't use any of my fucking spells on these Croak Raiders, I guess they're all gonna die.
That's okay, because you'll deal with the Croak Raiders with, wait for it, your druids.
What am I doing with them?
They'll be your mortality, sorry, your revive target, or whatever her spell now is called. Why?
The Croak Raiders are literally more important to me than the druids in that list. Why do I want to keep the druids alive?
I thought the theme made them faction.
No, it makes
no, them sack. No, it doesn't. So it doesn't.
It means that black clads can sack pawn to them, which is a problem if they're the most valuable thing in your army, because then it's your druids who you want to die, because you've got fucking rejuvenation on them and you can bring them back, sack pawning shots on the Croak Raiders that you can't bring back.
No, you sack them onto your Grizzen. Your Grizzen?
Yes,
your Grizzen.
Sure. Yeah, but those guys are worth more to you than the druids most of the time.
It feels like you've hit on the crux of the problem.
It's not a terrible theme. It's an okay theme. I think the current passion to play it with the Meme Raptor is fine. It's a decent theme. Druids are okay. They're not as good as I would like them to be. They're not as good as a lot of people would like them to be, but they are playable. They're okay. The Druid Riders are okay, with a question mark behind it. They're okay. So the problem with the theme that I found when I did try to use it, and it has been a while, was that it caps out at a very low power, and it's very hard to get it to a much higher than that power, and even if you bring in a caster with mortality, you're still hitting it like power 12.
And
if you bring in the bird as well, maybe you manage to make it up to power 14. Maybe if you try real hard, you could even get your cavalry to charge at power 16, which would almost put them in the same category as every other fucking cavalry in the game.
For how many buffs did you put on that guy?
Yeah, lots.
Okay, right.
It's a lot of work.
As someone who's recently had their magic theme go through like a renaissance almost and come out looking quite spectacular, this theme kind of does need a lot of quality of life. Like, you want a purpose for the druid mist riders, you want a purpose for a bunch of the random druid units.
Yes.
You don't really need a purpose for the black clads. They kind of do their job, and so
the black clads are fun.
Yeah, so do stone shapers. That's actually the kind of problem is that you're you don't have a use for these units that you've got of druids.
So what you have is a shitload of things that attack at power 10 or 12,
if druids
when you have another theme that is full of things that kill infantry.
Yes.
So you've got this whole theme that's just full of shit that should manipulate, but can't really manipulate because druids kind of got changed, so they don't manipulate per se, they just push.
So they shouldn't get the ability to push or pull again.
Well, I mean, they got rid of it deliberately. So presumably they went, that's not something we want in the game, and that's fine. But what they gave them back is okay. Like, what they got is a decent kit. It's just that there's nothing in the list that can take advantage of it. So you have all this shit that can knock people down and do cool stuff, but then you have no way to kill it once you knock it down. So you're like, ha-ha, hit you with my earth wind blast thing, and now you've fallen over, and so is your mate. Hit you with a power 10. Still alive, eh? Hit you with another power 10. And then you finish your turn.
Again, this thing really just wants, like, a bunch of, like, say, I don't know, Power 12 Weapon Master Berserker Mans who are basically there to just help him out, but it doesn't. So it calls in the favor of a bunch of minions, but the minions don't really gel with a lot of the circle casters, and that's realistically the crux of the problem.
I was thinking what would be cool is if you gave something in the theme junk, or junker, or whatever the equivalent thing is that gives you Weapon Master against knockdown shit.
Oh, trash. Yeah, that's it.
If you gave them that, then you'd have a reason to try and knock things down with your druids, because then you could shoot them with something else that killed them.
Minions gain trash.
No.
Chandlers would be real good as weapon masters. That might be too much. But something in
living there. Minions.
Or, like, I don't know, electroleaps gain additional dying knockdown shit for you, because there's not that many electroleaps. There's just the riot cavalry and the bird.
The important thing is that, basically, if you're playing Secret Masters, and I have to acknowledge, like, Brett Fogel won Warmshoe Weekend with Secret Masters with as one of his lists, and it was basically the equivalent of taking a Call of the Wild list and playing it instead of Secret Masters, specifically so that you could exploit that sack pawn. And that is a very, very relevant ability.
Yeah, there's a reason why Winter Guard Command is pretty good.
Yep. Yeah, but unlike Winter Guard Command, you can pick guys who don't have, like, a 12-13 stat line to sack pawn to. Which is important. So, it has to be acknowledged, that is a factor.
Have you tried sackpawning to husks? I wonder if you could put enough husks in to make that work. Do they trigger if you sackpawn to them?
They do.
That'd be pretty neat.
I like the idea here. Alright, moving on, before we
Are you allowed unlimited solos, or is there only unlimited units? I think it's only unlimited units.
Pretty sure it's unlimited units.
I'm allowed more solos, otherwise I'd be able to play, like...
No, actually, you can take unlimited minions. Boosh. Yeah, all right, make it happen, Colin.
Husk time.
There you go.
There's a note for you. There's some secret tech for you right there.
It's probably going to
test... druids and three husks. Problem solved.
It's probably going to involve Mercer as well.
Actually be viable, honestly.
Okay,
Might actually be okay. Well,
let's just talk about something actually viable. Sure. Probably a reason for anyone to listen to this cast, of course...
Devourer's Host.
Is that the only thing left?
Yeah.
That is the only thing left. We went through all the other janky themes, because I figured we should start with the best and end with the bestest.
So here's a theme that I played with and won.
You did.
Using
Kruger 1.
The beginning of themes.
Yeah. That was the only caster I could find for the theme as it was written then.
And for whatever reason, you didn't play Una 2.
Yes, because it was bullshit on the table. And we were like, if I play Una 2, so we need me to not play Una 2.
And then you won with Devourer's Host before it was Devourer's Host.
Yes.
You won with it anyway before you were called.
To do with the table.
Yes, I remember that table. It was amazing.
Yes, it was full of Burning Forest for no apparent reason.
Oh, Rob.
It's Burning Forest time, boys.
There were some pretty creative tables at the end of that tournament.
I remember having to play through, like, some fire trenches.
Yeah, you played through some trenches against
Yarn. He went in for burning shit. That tournament, he was just like, everything's on fire.
He
was using, like, hazardous terrain that wasn't used almost ever, so he was just like, fuck it, I'm going to force you guys to play with it. And then he may have gone a little overboard, but it waited for some really interesting tables to watch and look at.
Yeah, it did.
Because I do remember Chris playing the turn before that. He played with, like, Sorsha 1 into Yon's, like, Thexis list, and it was just trenches everywhere.
Oh, God.
It was just, like, a field of trenches, which was interesting as well, and I think some of them were on fire.
Yeah, at least I remember to bring some capacity to deal with...
There was a Victor, it was fine.
But...
Or a Conquest, something like that.
A gun carriage, to my dismay. However... I did not have a Colossal. I had a gun carriage.
So there's some things to note about this before we get into what happened to it in the CID. So the fundamental problem with Tharn pre-CID was twofold. One, they couldn't break armor to save their life.
Not an issue anymore.
You capped out your entire army at, like, power 13, other than your heavies. And two, you couldn't keep Tharn alive with their stat line long enough to actually deliver them so that they could kill shit.
Also, not an issue anymore.
Nowhere near as much of an issue.
Oh, my God.
So the CID did a couple of things that were super important, and then a whole bunch of things that were just random shit that no one really saw coming.
Fucking Lord of the Feast.
That were big bonuses. So, start off, as a full disclosure, Lord of the Feast has always been one of my favourite models, particularly with a couple of different casters, one of which was great. He kind of accidentally got buffed to hell and back during the CID process, and I guess we'll cover him in a little bit. The primary things that they targeted deliberately were survivability of Tharn and effectiveness, I guess, of Tharn. And they noted that damage into armor was a problem for that theme before they started CID. So to fix that, the biggest beneficiary of the entire real change probably was Tharn Ravagers, who got a kind of multifold buff. First, they picked up Brutal Charge, so now they could hit at power 15, which is a significant change on their damage profile into armor. Then they got a defensive buff in terms of they picked up Rapid Healing.
Did they always have Vengeance?
They always did,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Okay. Rapid Healing was new, and that...
That made Vengeance a lot more...
At the time, I wasn't sure how much of an effect that would have, but it really changed their profile into power 10.
Yes.
And that was a massive change for that theme, because previously, if you ran into an army that was just a shitload of power 10s, you just died. Like, if they just shot you with power 10s all day, all of your Tharn died, and nothing got there.
There's other random changes to their profile, like Ravager Shamans, for instance, gain command bonuses.
I'm getting there. Give me a second.
No, you know what? Fine. Go for it. What do you think you are, a circle expert? Oh, shit, you are. Oh, all right.
So they gave them a way to get through for any caster, which was, I think, their intent. The problem with that was that combos with casters that were already decent at getting them there, making it very, very difficult for some armies to deal with double ravagers now. So if you have any defensive buffs to go with that, then your double ravagers basically become immune to power 10 and power 12 shooting.
Plus 3 death against range attacks.
Correct.
Cover and immune to blast
damage. There's a few casters that do that. You can probably guess them from the magic words that are being thrown out around the
minus
table.
5 range to guns.
A feat that brings all your models back.
Sure.
A spell that brings all your models back and gives them an armor buff.
So that was step one. Ravagers became very good. And you can definitely play the core double Ravager that you will see in most, I would say, builds that are going around. Double Ravagers is pretty solid as a starting point for most casters. It's pretty hard for most enemies to really be able to just wipe that off the table now. And as a result, if it gets there, it gets to do work. And that was always the case. So if Ravagers got there, they always got to do a little bit of work. And my previous list basically relied on 2 or 3 making it to their army and hoping that they did well enough. Now, in that same scenario, probably 6 or 7 get there. And that's a lot of Ravagers once they get there.
Mm-hmm.
So Ravagers got a big buff. Outside of Ravagers, Blood Trackers were already pretty good. They were already a decent unit. They had suffered because they'd lost Repo and they'd had what was Swift Hunter instead, which was a shitty rule on them. They got back Repo, which was really good for them. And then out of the blue, and I suspect that Pagani, who is now exiting the company, who can probably talk more freely about it after he's exited the company, but I suspect this was entirely him because he and I had spent a lot of time bitching about how Prey was designed and problems with Prey as a skill.
The mini feat?
Yeah. So I think that mini feat should, in my opinion, be the standard for Prey. Like, if a model is going to get given the rule Prey, it should have the
ability
to
choose. Unless it's a feat or something else.
So it can be... My preferred option was you just blanket change the rule Prey to not being on until you make an attack. So the first thing you target is your Prey, and that's it.
Sure.
Right.
And that was always the way that I thought you could get around most of the problems around Prey, and it stopped you having that issue of, oh, I forgot to declare Prey at the start of the game. Well, fuck, now we have an argument over whether or not I get to declare Prey. So instead, they went down the path of a mini feat on Nuala. So Nuala is now 100% required for that unit, regardless of any other rules. She was already required, and she has all the rules in the world for no apparent reason.
That unit, by the way, is also FA1. It's one of the few units that's still FA1.
Yes. And it has to be.
Yes.
Although, if you couldn't get Nuala, you might not buy a second unit, except with some casters. So
quite happy as FA1, yes, frankly.
Yeah. So that mini feat changes them very dramatically. You can now use prey effectively because now when you put prey on something at the start of the game, it actually causes the opponent to play around prey, but you still have prey. Whereas previously, if you put prey on something, they could play around prey and then you just didn't have prey, period. So it changes their profile really, really significantly. Going from power 9 to power 11 is a massive change. Going to power 14 under Iona is a very, very, very big change. And 13 under a variety of other casters with the two buffs. So notably, it is a throw-on weapon, so Balder 1's spell affects it, and also, obviously, Curse of Shadows and stuff affects it from various casters.
Iona's feat?
Yes. So Iona's feat takes them to power 14. Yes. And gives them rerolls on attacks.
Yep.
Yeah, under the feet, they're very good. Very, very good.
We'll discuss that more when we get to Iona. We'll get to the casters. Yes.
But yeah, so Blood Trackers were already good and are now very good. Blood Weavers were probably the disappointment. Sorry, go for it.
Well, there was one thing we forgot to mention about Blood Trackers, or I missed you saying it, was the change to how they just all start with a corpse token.
Blood Trackers don't get it. I was going to mention that.
Sure.
A bit later, but we can if you want.
No, we actually should do it because it has changed the profile. So previously,
it affects everything.
Yeah,
sure. But I mean, if we talk about it now,
okay, so then
we'll be able to mention it later.
Regardless, the big thing with the Tharn theme is that the change used to be the list used to be basically you would get corpse tokens for like every X amount of
every 10 points worth of Tharn,
and that included your free cards, which was a bit weird. And what it typically meant was that your
6 or 7.
Your Death Warps typically started with all the corpses they wanted, and then they'd get a quick top-up from the pot, and that'd be it. Now, instead, what happens is all of your Tharn who can take a corpse token...
All models who can take a corpse token.
Okay. All models that can take a corpse token, because now they remember Death Warps are not technically
and
Tharn.
And also the pot gets to start with one.
And also your caster gets to start with one, if that is relevant.
Well, that only affects one caster, and he is Tharn.
Cool. Done.
So that one would have worked anyway.
Technically correct.
But the crock pot is the one that is the big surprise.
Anyhow, they all get a corpse because there was a pre-work barbecue and they all went and snacked out.
Yeah, it was a weird choice.
It very much changes how, like, Ravagers actually work because it means that Ravagers are now super accurate if they want
to
be.
Well, yeah, they can use that to boost the attack roll, which means they're boosting to hit, boosting to damage. And then they kill the model, which means they get the corpse that they spent back to buy attacks. Or if they think the model that they're going to kill doesn't require a boost, they can buy and then get a corpse, and then buy and then get a corpse, and then buy and then get a corpse.
They'll keep the original corpse to hedge bets, right? Like, yeah. It means it completely changes how Ravagers work, and I think there's a unit that
Colin
probably wanted to mention, which I might mention now, which is Blood Pack, which have finally, after several years... recovered from the nerfs inflicted by certain individuals who we will not discuss.
Okay.
Blood Pack were a decent unit in one or two lists in Mark II. They were a terrible unit for the first year and a half of Mark III, or however many years it took to get to CID. And now they are a very much functional unit. Mm-hmm. So now, the starting with a corpse is a weird thing for them because it kind of... they deliberately nerfed the map on Blood Pack and dropped them to 6 from 7, which made sense because they were like, well, these guys shouldn't be that good at punching people because they're bowmen.
Well, and they could boost.
They all start with a corpse, so now they're mat 6 guided hand, which is a very significant improvement from mat 7. So given that the unit was never doing more than one or two melee attacks a game anyway, effectively they gained mat through the change in the theme.
Not just that, the Ravager White Mane used to only work on Ravagers, and now works on all Tharn, including Blood Pack.
Yes.
Or Blood Packed.
So the weird thing for them was they went from being power 13 and range 10, which was pretty shitty, and having Assault, which was not particularly helpful, to now being range 12 and power 14. Which is a very big number. And they have Arcing Fire, which is a weird thing that sometimes matters.
Well, it also doesn't make sense, because literally in the fluff, they specifically go that the bows are designed to shoot in a straight line, and they can't arc, and then they're like, they magically arc!
That's why they're power 14, is because they're literally just a giant chunk of wood fired through you. But now they're fired through you by going upwards a really long way first, then they fall a really long way.
No, I've got it. It's reverse arcing fire. Instead of arcing over, it arcs under. I because it just goes straight.
Oh, you put the spin on it.
No, it shoots through the earth. says,
"Whoa, Jesus!"
Yeah, yeah.
I was just rifling it so that you could fire through the legs of the guy in front, right? So you fire it and it spins and it does like a googly fire and then takes out.
Oh, right. You want to do
that's
like
what
that.
I also yeah. thought.
Well,
you were saying.
I was just thinking it shoots straight in a line like a rail gun, which is apparently what it is.
But it doesn't kill the guy in front.
It, you know.
No, no, because the curvature of the earth means it goes under his feet and turns.
Range 4,650 inches.
I know, this is
the only target models that are
this is the only way it makes sense according to Chris's definition.
Well, you gave me the definition that apparently they got only shooting a straight line, which I only found out in about 20
maybe
seconds
it's going
ago.
So fast, yes. It just passes
maybe
through the
so,
first
maybe
model.
Maybe the reason they're Power 14 is because they have to go so fast that they break the laws of physics itself and they fade
they just,
temporarily
yeah.
out of our dimension.
And into the next,
so the next person. In
I have
the
a much more logical argument. They have blood magic.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Okay, cool.
So they have to spend arcing fire. Okay, yeah. So they have arcing fire. They are now a good unit.
Yes.
They are rat 6. They have range 12. They do get to aim every now and again.
They have tree walker, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's a very good rule on a ranged unit that has a decent range.
It means that they can play into other ranged units and have a significant advantage.
Yes. So
like, another reason
table,
why I get fucked playing them.
If there are forests on the table, or you're playing either Balder or Wormwood, where you can make your own forest, they have a significant advantage into a lot of things. So we didn't really talk about tree walker on Ravages because... Well, mostly because it's something they already had to start with. And it is a nice rule. It is sometimes very relevant. So if you also have another defense augmenter like Surefoot or something similar, then it can be very relevant. You can get your Ravages up to Def 17, for example. But most of the time, it's a nice-to-have rule for the Ravages. But for the Blood Pack, it is an exceptionally good rule if there are forests on the table. The ability to take ranged shots through a forest is a very, very strong ability because it's basically non-existent in the game outside of Treewalker. And so they have that, and they now have a significant enough range that they can use it. I think, and I'm going to check on this, I think they lost Repo, right? They briefly had it in CID.
Oh, yeah, they definitely lost that.
What's that noise?
Yeah, they had Repo 3 for
a while. They don't sit behind forests. They don't need to have the ability to come out and then go back in.
Just making sure, because I know I haven't played them with it the last few times, but I was like, I wonder if I've just...
Oh, we've all played CID, CID games, forgetting which rules they've...
I'm going to go into the next unit. So, look, the Thon... I think we should cover Thon in depth, because Thon is
the thing you're
going to
see.
There are the thing you're going to see. They're also one of those themes, kind of like Exemplar, where you have very like distinct unit types. It's not like Manowar, where what are the models of Manowar? They're basically 10 16s or 10 21s. That's literally it. They're all medium.
Yes, there's a lot of flavor in Tharn.
Yeah.
Because you have the female Tharn, the male Tharn, and the ones that ride on wolves.
Yes, which I'm going to talk about.
Yes, but they
point.
Have different stats.
Because you've got Bloodweavers, and Bloodweavers are a disappointment. A bunch of people swear about them being great and all that. Frankly, as far as I'm concerned, they're kind
of
shit.
Something had to be disappointing out of that CIA.
Exactly. And then one of the reasons
came out of it that was over the top.
They get ambushed.
They get ambushed. And
ambush is a good rule.
It's not... Really, like, it's funny because Bloodweavers to me is like the perfect ambush unit because you're speed 7, you have a. Oh, I think they're speed 7 at least.
Yeah.
So, you're speed 7, you have a UA that gives you signs and portents on the turn you charge, and you have ambush, so you always charge and you have your max unit, and they're still shit.
You threaten
13 and so, I don't think they're shit, it's just that the theme is so good and all the other things you can take them are so good that ambushing signs and portents. Charges off the sideboard aren't worth anything.
Not relevant.
They don't threat as far as bears.
I never said that they were as good as bears. Bears are the best ambush units in the game. Yes, you would know, wouldn't you, Colin?
Again, both cases not actually relevant. The actual problem I find with Bloodweavers is that they have to complete with wolves. Wolf champions and wolf riders. And both of them exist in a very single thing. Like, if there's a wolf rider just hanging around near the side of a table edge. To anyone who hasn't played against wolf riders, and especially wolf rider champions have an absurd threat range. They basically get to run the table like it's their bitch. And this is a problem because they actually exist in the same spot where ambushing Bloodweavers would be really good.
But you have wolves.
Because you've got wolves to do very similar thing. And unlike Bloodweavers...
And it's significantly harder to kill.
Correct. And they also juke. They If you
attack further, they do more things.
Yes, they're more flexible, they're cheaper.
The Wolf Riders, I think, are one of the best things to come out of the CID from my point of view, because they are one of the more fun units to play.
Yeah.
The Wolf Rider Champion is bananas. It's a weird model.
They kind of got like the idea of how important movement shenanigans can be in the game, and kind of got it right in a model.
I think so, because the Wolf Riders
unlike didn't cats,
get the damage output that they nearly got.
Fuck that. Which
would have been broken as shit. So I'm glad that they didn't. But they did get enough movement and enough defense to make them actually feasibly playable in the role that they're meant to play. And that's all I wanted from them. They are probably still a little too good with Iona, but basically everything in Tharn is a little too good with Iona.
Well, she cranks them all up to 12.
Yeah, correct. Well, they make so many attacks. They really take so good advantage of her ball. Like, she has the perfect mix of rules that they want.
She's built to have a unit of Wolf Riders.
So when you're comparing with a bunch of Wolf Riders, it's a reason why Bloodweavers end up on the side, but that's okay.
Bloodweavers are cheaper, but not once you buy the UA.
Correct.
That's actually one of the reasons that I think they have a problem, is that the UA is like an extra 50% cost on the unit. And it's just not worth it.
And it's not like, it's also not like Knights Exemplar, who have a very similar problem, except that they're in a faction which can routinely bring them back and then have them go and charge and stuff, or not have them die in the first place.
Yeah, but Exemplars wouldn't come back from the dead if they were ambushing.
Yeah, true. But that doesn't matter.
But they
just come back.
But they're also weapon masters.
I'm not saying they're that...
very significantly better hitter than
I agree, but you're saying like they can if they also for whatever reason had that rule, they would also not get to recur because that is not how that works.
Yes,
being that far away.
Bloodweavers are just the forgotten child because that's there's fair. A lot of good things.
Something has list. To.
Yes,
it's so, not. It's not.
If you're going to provide four different units that are all good in the same thing, then someone is going to miss out, and the fifth unit is Bloodweavers.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
So we'll talk about more probably when we get in the individual classes, but what I think this all makes up into Devourer's Host is you have an infantry theme that abuses terrain like, frankly, nothing else.
There's one more thing.
All right,
you can take Getarix in just about any list.
Oh, we haven't covered Solos or Beasts.
He was starting to summarize.
You want to know why I summarized? Because we literally would basically spend the entire thing talking about Devourer's Host.
Was that not the plan?
No, we'd talk about the individual classes and how they abused Devourer's Host.
Thank you very much. Okay. But also the beasts in Devourer's Host.
Yeah.
Which are only living ones.
And also the solos, right?
Yeah. Okay, this is probably... Well, I had to cut it off somewhere, otherwise we'd literally go through the entire CID.
Sure. So
we haven't even talked about the Night Witch yet.
That's a model you don't see very often compared
to the same reason. You probably should.
Yeah. You should. It's a good model.
It's just that it's...
It falls into the cracks.
Yes.
So it's difficult to fit because of, weirdly enough, the solo attachment. Because she takes its spot.
Yeah. You mean the blood? Oh, the blood priest.
Blood priest or whatever the fuck they call it.
Priestess.
Yeah,
priestess.
Because of her, when you have 4 points or the option for one of your free solo slots, she gets it before the Night Witch, most of the time.
Fair.
And that means that the Night Witch never makes it because you've got Wolf Rider champions ahead of her, you've got a Ravager champion ahead of her, you've got Lord of the Feast ahead of her, and you've possibly got a Shaman ahead of her.
Even a White Mane and a...
That's what I meant, yeah.
We have to talk about Lord of the Feast. We'll talk about
Lord of the Feast after, I reckon, going through the casters. But again, like...
We haven't covered Death Wards either.
Yes, in summary, Devourer's Host has a bunch of terrain-abusing models which have a whole bunch of dickish rules.
They hit like a truck.
They have...
Hard to kill.
Unlike a lot of the other kind of themes that have gone through CID, they have a very, very broad stat line. Like, you have to be able to kill 13, 15 rapid-healing, steady-tough models, and 15, 14, with annoyance, cavalry models.
And Prowl.
And 14, 11 stealth blood trackers.
Yep.
The way I look at it, is there a slightly more fair, less offensive version of Mark II Legion to play against?
Wow, alright. Okay.
Well, because one of the frustrating things about playing against Legion was the fact that no matter what was on the fucking table, it didn't matter unless you were playing Legion, because they just ignored every rule. And that, because the way tables are usually made, that essentially counts for Tharn. Because they use less guns, it's less offensive. But the fact that they abuse forests, they abuse rough terrain, they can make more forests so that they can control the way the table and looks and feels.
Very few TOs use that many obstructions or that many clouds.
And then it only makes them just as good as any other faction. There's very few factions that abuse like obstructions the same way that circle
to abuse forests. Like, wolf riders are exceptional at abusing structures.
Because of their weird non-linear threat ranges.
Yeah. And they're decent at working their way around clouds because they've all got really low range on their weapons anyway. So they're kind of like, I'm going to stand in the cloud and throw rocks at you.
And that's why I find playing against them really can be really frustrating is because they just don't care what the table lay. Well, no, that's not fair. They care about the table layout more than anybody else because they're the ones who are going to abuse it like no one else.
Sure.
And that's...
Yeah, if you give them a complete parking lot with no terrain on it, it's not a good time.
Sure, but then it's not good... But then that's really good for them, like, say, Signar or Crucible Guard.
Yes.
But at the same time, that's not really good for the game.
No, no,
but
I agree.
Heavy terrain is just disgusting with Tharn right now.
Yeah, exactly. And
especially considering you can add terrain... with a few of the casters.
As one of my good friends, Will Crookshanks, put it, right? Protectorate is the best faction in the game. Circle is the second best, because it has a good matchup into Protectorate. And that's how it works.
I don't know if that's true, but okay.
I would probably put that as the current...
I don't know.
I think it's a bit of a totalitarian statement, but, you know, it is actually a
good one.
Because basically, if you want raw numbers, you'd be looking at like something like Kador or Protector or something like that. But if you want to have a good answer into a lot of the meta, it turns out basically circle between being able to abuse the table, being able to...
Well, they're just one of the... They're also one of the strongest lists now into guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they have a good pair at the moment.
Correct. That's also another thing.
Which a lot of people don't have, so...
Yes. Speaking of which, I'd like to go in the casters.
Sure.
I'd like to talk about Death Wolves and stuff later, if possible. Okay. But I suspect it'll come up in talking about several of these casters.
Sure.
I can think of a couple of them. All right, so Circle have a bunch. We'll probably start with Balder 1 and 2.
Because you know what? This is in alphabetical order.
This actually is in alphabetical
Balder
order.
Balder 2, I don't think there is a huge call for playing him in Tharn. You can, if you really want to. Because we haven't really talked about Getarix, and Getarix is a fucking nut job now.
He just gained
rapid healing and spiny growth, so he's effectively sort of armor 21 against most things.
So he's base armor 17 or base armor 19?
He's base armor 17. So he goes to 19 with spiny growth, and then rapid healing is roughly +2 most of the time.
Yeah,
it
basically is better against models that don't crack armor consistently.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And Balder 2 has +3 armor, so you can effectively make
him. And he's still
Def
14, which means if you miss, it makes the map even better.
In Balder 2, it's fucking obscene because then you put a wall in front of him and you give him Roots of the Earth, and now he's basically Def 16 against melee and armor 24, and that's just
close.
Out of the range of pretty much anybody.
You need to have Grievous Wounds.
You need Blessed and Grievous Wounds.
You need to freeze him. Freezing him also works, but you just need
you need ways around it. If you don't have ways around it, you're going to have a real bad time.
And there's not that many options.
Now, Balder 2 can still take Megalith in the theme, so that means that he gets another copy of Roots of the Earth if he wants it, which is nice.
Blood Drinker Megalith.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost that rule, I'm aware.
He lost that rule.
But it's always going to be one of my favorite, like, dumb things.
Yeah, I remember smashing a Mage Hunter corpse in his face. I did good, right?
So if you
wanted to, you could play Balder 2. I wouldn't. I don't think there's a really good cause to, but it wouldn't be terrible.
I think the actual answer is that previously you played Balder 2 to answer into guns and the like, and you don't have to anymore, which is
certainly
nice.
Not for Tharn. Now, that said, you do get a good turn where everybody's armor 18.
Everyone's
you get
like,
that with Iona, and it's a shitload better.
Yeah, because Iona also increases deeps as much easier.
We'll get to her.
Yes. Okay, so...
Balder 1.
Now, Balder 1, I think, is one of the better casters for Tharn. He is one of the ones that deals with Lady Tharn better than he does with the men.
Well,
but
that's...
he can still run double Ravages because Ravages are just good now.
Solid Ground is just a fucked
up spell.
Solid Ground is
a great spell. It makes Blood Trackers very, very happy. And then combined with Stone Skin, which makes them power 11 and power 13 against their prey... It's just really good.
As someone who may have been accused of abusing Solid Ground in my time, I can assure you that Solid Ground on stealth models is always... It's a good spell, Brandon.
But it's also really just good on the Malethorn, because the Malethorn gets a tough, and then they keep going like nothing happened.
It is. The only downside is that when they blast you, you don't get to rapid heal.
That's fair.
I mean,
so you can play Balder 1 with... Blood Trackers, I would recommend that. You can play Balder 1 with Wolf Riders. I think that's fine as well. You can make them power 11, which is good. You can play Balder 1 with Double Ravages if you wish, and that is perfectly fine. And Double Ravages, Blood Trackers is probably your standard core for most casters. It's an easy starting point. It's really simple to get into the faction. If that's the way you want to do it, then that's a very simple list.
It's also a control feat, which is pretty nice.
It is. He has a very nice feat. His feat is underrated most of the time. He's one of the casters that benefits the most from the well, in the sense that making him control 14 is a really big deal for solid ground and his feat.
His feat just is, it's the most... It's weird, because most feats don't work that way, where it's literally, I have rough terrain in my control area, and you can't have Pathfinder. Right. There is no answer to this unless you fly.
It,
you're going to
drop it. That's the way it is. If you have flight, you get around it, everything else, or ghostly.
Oh, ghostly.
There are answers, but like you cannot just answer with, I give him Pathfinder
It's not like, say, Cold Grammar, where you can answer it with an objective, where you just give yourself Pathfinder.
Well, most things are like that. Yeah. Most things strip it, but
I don't know, Lanissa Rissel, when she puts up her dumb spell, or the trolls who do the similar thing, and you can kill them first, and then activate your models. No, there's no answer to it. You just eat shit.
So Border One has a really good feat. He has always had a good feat. Strength of Earth, or Stone Skin, is a good spell. It has always been a good spell. It's not a great spell, because it drops you one speed, and it drops you one death, which is annoying, but that's fine. Solid Ground is a great spell. Rapid Growth is a great spell for Tharn. Being able to put out a 4-inch forest is a brilliant thing for Tharn for a variety of reasons. It works really well with Blood Pack, it works really well with Ravagers, it works really well in general as a line of sight denial for everybody. And it combos with his Forest Walk as his personal assassination if you decide that's the path you want to go down.
If you just need to.
Like, yeah, some days you just have to stick Tritus into somebody's face and have them have weight of stone and die.
Some days you do that, and then they have -3 defense, and then you shoot them even in combat, and you're like, I'm happy with this.
Good times. So Border 1 is good. I really like Border 1. He's one of my top sort of 3 to 5 casters for Devourer's Host. I think he's a great caster to use, and he's good fun. He works well on Scenario.
And this is the part where we're going to segue. So one of the things I fucking hate about Border 1 is he has a very good Lord of the Feast.
He does. So his Lord of the Feast is probably in the top 3 to 5.
Yeah. Lord of the Feast...
That's why he's under the top 5 casters.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence. You're going to see that a lot.
So, no, as a result of that, very good. As a result of that, Colin, please describe us your favourite model.
Fuck him. So he's fucked.
Lord of the Feast in Mark 2 had basically what he has now, but slightly less of it, and no access to corpses. So when they made changes to Lord of the Feast, they made a couple of changes that mattered. One was they made it so that corpses give him armor and strength. Armor and strength. He never got strength from it before. And one of the things that they did was they gave him grievous wounds randomly, which no one saw coming. And then they gave him back 2-inch reach, and then they gave him back flexibility on the way that he attacked. So now he has basically the best of everything that he could have had. I think as Frawley put it, the only thing he is missing is overtake, and that would be bananas.
He used to have overtake.
Briefly.
Very, very
quick. So, Lord of the Feast is a very, very flexible, strong solo now. He is incredibly good at doing ridiculous amounts of damage to targets that he has no business doing damage to. He only has one remaining weakness, and that's his ability to hit his shot with the bird if you're relying on that to deliver him to the target.
But wait, Colin, I have a solution for you. And this solution happens to also be a nice buff to Lord of the Feast.
What solution's that?
That would be this certain minion unit that happens to have a bunch of corpses and a spell called, how should I put it, puppet strings.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I would say, personally, and this is something that when I was fucking around with how to build lists for this, one of the combos that I ended up buying on most of my lists was if you have a caster who can use Death Walls, then Death Walls plus the Crockpot is 14 points, which leaves you with just enough to get 61 points or 60 points. There's a couple of different combos that do it, of Tharn, which gives you 3 free solos and gives you your meeting all of the things for the theme list. The theme benefit is worded as everybody that can have a corpse gets a corpse, which means the Death Walls all start with one, and it means the Crockpot starts with one for no apparent reason. The reason that's important is that on turn one, when you spin up corpses for your crock pot, it is no longer possible for you to not have at least 2 corpses at the end of that turn, which means you can drop both of those corpses on Lord of the Feast and guarantee every single time that he will have 3 corpses turn one. So for Balder 1, that means that he's armor 21 when he's got stone skin on him at that point, so he can walk forward turn one and be standing in a spot where, unless they have some way to kill an 8-box armor 21 stealth model, you should be fine, and then the following turn he can deliver to wherever you want him to, and he gets puppet strings that turn from the pot, because the pot now doesn't have to spin for corpses for him. So that means that the turn that he goes in, he has puppet strings on the gunshot, And if he manages to hit the gunshot without the puppet strings, because he is Rat 7, then you have the option to spend the puppet strings at any point during his attack sequence. And that's an extra couple of damage on one of those attacks, most likely.
They made a Skin and Bones a solo.
Sort of.
Where that can fucking teleport with a gun.
And has Thresher.
Fucking disgusting.
So he typically makes between 4 and 10 attacks when he goes in. Depending on like how many things you can land him on.
Yep.
And it is worth spending your turn setting up just to deliver him. That is worth it, because most of the time when you deliver him, he will earn you back 16 or 20 points.
For the reverse perspective, single-handedly, Lord of the Feast is responsible for making the Armored Core matchup into Circle from being a fairly comfortable one. You have a lot of guns, and you have enough armor to ward away Tharn.
Borderline impossible.
To
makes it real hard.
Really hard, on account of you have to deal with this teleporting fuckwit
who kills tankers. Like, it's his job.
It is his job.
Because he goes into the back arc. It also takes care of an entire unit of shock troopers, too.
Most
of the unit. If he's killing tankers as well, he probably can't get all of the...
Oh, what a shame. But
I think he got 3 and 2 tankers.
He got 3 to 4 demo core, 2 tankers, and some other random models.
Just a little bit too close.
And I'm pretty sure the answer that random other guy was just like, Kaiazi Eliminator. It was like, wait, what?
Where the fuck did you come from? Yeah. So, to give you an idea, and I don't play Balder 1 as much as I play some of the other casters, but he does go in, even with Balder 1, if you've built the list for him, so you've also brought the Blood Solo Witch Lady, who gives him Divine Inspiration, then he effectively is roughly map 10, probably in the back arc of most of the things he's hitting. And in the case of Balder, he's probably roughly power 20. He's not exactly power 20. Divine Inspiration doesn't quite work out that way, so it's somewhere around 9.5. But you've got a puppet strings as well to throw in there, so you'll get the Thresher on everybody at the maximum power, and you can fuck around with the way that works, so you can boost damage on the later rolls in the sequence. So you can't boost attacks, because if you do that, then you lose power. But you can choose the order in which you roll your damage rolls from the Thresher. And you can choose to boost the later damage rolls, and everything subsequent to that will take the reduction in power, but the ones prior to that will be at the full power. So you can hit the first guy at power 20, the second guy at power 20, effectively, and then hit the third guy by choice at power 19, and the fourth guy at power 19, with a boost on one of those two. And that's relevant because if you have 3 corpses going in, and you're killing a bunch of dudes that you auto-kill, then you want to boost damage on a couple of heavies at the same time, because you'll get your corpses back anyway, and then you can buy your attacks and keep doing what
you're
doing.
It's literally a Ponzi scheme.
Correct. Yeah, so, look, he is, in my opinion, broken. I think he is well outside the power curve that was intended for him. And I think that only really comes to the fore if you play him with the Crockpot. If you play him without the Crockpot, then it is actually a lot easier for him to not get his points back and not be good and not make you feel like you have control of the game. But if you're playing with Divine Inspiration and the Crockpot, then you will feel like a god.
Yeah.
And he does just... You will find that you can get 20 points for him very easily.
To recap one of our older episodes, Super Series, I remember seeing Rosie have his church shot by Lord of the Feast. Lord of the Feast getting ported into range of a Warder, 4 Bastions, and Harvey, and the church. By the end of it, there was the church... and Harvey, which had taken damage.
Harvey got like 2 boxes and Grievous Wounds.
She was not having a good day.
So Grievous Wounds is a really weird thing for him to have randomly got, and it means that when you jump him into a bunch of shit, particularly if there's light warjacks and stuff, you just cripple them, like accidentally. Like you swing, you don't bother buying attacks on them, you just Thresher, and your Thresher on like an Arc Node, for example, will do like 8 or 10 damage. And it will be Grievous Wounds. And that's the end of that arc node a lot of the time. Like, it just does nothing useful for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So he is super good. You do need to build for him, I think. If you play him in Iona and you don't have the Crockpot and you don't have anything to really buff him, then he's kind of mediocre, because he goes in with 1 corpse. If he misses the shot, then he's completely fucked. You only get the reroll from the feat if you want to use the feat. He doesn't get the strength or the armor from it. So he goes in at power 13, power 14. If he's got 1 corpse, it's okay. He's still decent. Like, it still makes sense as a solo, particularly a free solo. But I think the real point where he just breaks is when you have a caster that has a good buff for him and you have the Crockpot.
Yeah.
I would strongly recommend it. It's a great deal of fun.
I would strongly disrecommend it. It is not fun. I don't want to fucking see it again. I've literally just...
You're going
to
see it a lot. I'm going to see
it. It's a reason I'm bringing Old Witch 2 out of retirement. Not that she ever really entered retirement, to be fair. Just primarily because she has a good answer to Lord of the Feast.
Oh, the next one's really easy.
Cool, Brad.
Next one's Bradagus. You can't play him in this theme. Next.
You play him in Bones.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so which you already talked about.
You literally can't play him in this theme.
Yeah, but we're not talking about him only in this theme. We're talking about them in general.
Yeah, we're talking about him in general.
Oh.
Yes.
So, in Devourer's Host, then.
Yes, but he plays in a Bones. We've already talked about him in Bones.
Okay, so Brad is good in Bones. Play him in Bones. If you want to play him in Secret Masters, you can, that's fine.
I mean, Brad's a pretty simple guy. He does one job.
Don't play him in Wild Hunt. That's a terrible idea.
Just don't. Like, if it seems like a terrible... Brad is a very simple guy. Just don't try and, like, rock the bucket. Don't try and do some kind of Secret Masters jank with Brad.
Rock the bucket?
Yeah, rock the boat. You don't want to rock the bucket, then. Seriously, then they might kick your boat.
You don't know what's in the bucket.
Next thing you know, there'll be a farm. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so, okay, Bradagus, yes, play him in Bones. That's good.
Bradagus's job is basically to kill stuff dead.
Do you want to skip or do you want to do Grail?
Fuck no. The whole reason I got you in the cast is to do Grail.
So Grail does the best Lord of the Feast because Storm Rager is the best single target buff available for Lord of the Feast in faction.
All true.
It does make him mat 10. It does make him base power 18 effectively with 3 corpses. He also becomes randomly immune to CMA and CRA, which is once relevant in my entire life of playing him. Aside from that, Grail has a feat that works for Lord of the Feast if you really want it to. So if you haven't already delivered Lord of the Feast by the time you're feeding with Grail, then you can get an extra 3 inches out of it. If you're playing into something like Windstorm, then that can be relevant because then you can charge with Lord of the Feast and bird to something different and then make your Thresher attack. So it's important to note, again, with Lord of the Feast, they basically fixed all of the things that were not optimal for him. So now he can charge a target, then bird to a different target before he makes his charge attack, and then Thresher, like Blood Reaper, and hit everything. Interesting little interaction. If the target that you charge is also the target that you shoot, and you end up, or you shoot something else, either way, as long as you end up with your melee range still targeting, like still in range of the original charge target, then you still get your boosted charge attack. You just get to do it from somewhere better.
Yep, you get to do it at janky.
Yeah, you get to gain even more. You get to just keep on printing lemons.
Why is it printing lemons?
I don't know, because we're kicking a bucket, man.
I see we've completely mangled all of our technology.
Aside from that, Grail, I really liked Grail as a caster in Mark II for fun, and Lord of the Feast killed people bottom of one for me in Mark II. In Mark III, he was better than he was in Mark II, but there was nothing really that was good for him. He doesn't play Bones particularly well. You can play him in Bones. He's just not anywhere near as good as most of the good casters in Bones. He can play Call of the Wild. He just doesn't have a buff for Beasts, so it's kind of shitty. His feat is still decent. His feat is hard to use, is significantly less good than it looks on paper when you think about it, and then is really... Some games can decide things, but most games you could choose to use it as stealth if you wanted to, and it would be okay. Or you could choose to use it as a threat range extender for 2 or 3 models, and that's generally what it gets used as. That can be very relevant for Devourer's Host. So a threat range extension of 3 inches on one Ravager when it's the only Ravager that then makes it into an entire unit of infantry and gets there with 3 corpses because you've got the crockpot, that's a big difference from no Ravagers making it in. So his feat is good. I like his feat. I'd rather he had a better feat, but it's an okay feat. Aside from that, his spell list is decent. He has Gallows, which is a situationally good spell. He only gets to use it very occasionally, but it's an okay spell. It does combo with the Crockpot's version of Gallows, so you can have 2 Gallows from your list if you're running the Crockpot plus him. He also has Windstorm, which is a situationally good spell. It fixes the only thing other than obstructions that Tharn can't see through.
Fun fact, actually, I've found if you're playing against Circle, it will seem silly the first time you do it, but probably be prepared to do it. Cloud up forests.
Sure.
It will look ridiculous because you're basically dumping clouds on top of
line of sight blocking terrain.
But it's funny. It's funny just how much it works, right? Yep. It also means that if you're setting up cloud walls, like say you have a Haley 2 Trenchalist or something like that, sometimes it's worth ghostwalking the trenches so they can set up clouds in forests to stop a giant hole in... Because the problem is otherwise you have real trouble setting up cloud walls and terrain blocking things because normally your anchor piece is like forest, which you'd use to deny line of sight, and generally speaking works.
Are now giant holes. Yeah.
They're now actually liabilities because
Lord of the Beast can't see through them. They didn't give him Tree Walker.
Fuck you.
Oh, that's such a shame. Thankfully, Grail can get rid of the clouds and away with his Windstorm. Windblast.
So the only other spell that Grail has that is really relevant, and I think it's actually all of the spells on his list, is Death March, which is not super relevant, but it is kind of nice to either have Blood Trackers or Death Walls with Death March. Death Walls trigger, because of the way Vengeance was changed now, they can...
It's way better.
Yes, they can use...
They're just like, oh, you did one damage,
and then they get Vengeance, which is great.
Yes.
And alternately, you can put it on your Blood Trackers, and then you've got three units with Vengeance if you're playing double Ravages plus Blood Trackers. And that's troublesome for your opponent, particularly because his feat works okay, and the plus two mat on Blood Trackers is relevant, particularly if they then mini feet swap prey. Because then they're mat 10, and they have quick work, so they then mat 10 charges into infantry, which is good, and then they quick work into shit behind it, which is fine.
I'm going to bring out another one of our standouts in this thing, which you've mentioned just now, which is the Death Wolves.
Yes.
Because Grail's Death Wolves, I frequently see you give Skull, the guy with the axe.
Yeah.
Frequently seen that asshole with Stormrager.
Yeah.
Just like having a blast, going through, and just being the most biggest fucking
jackass.
Yeah.
So that list, when they changed the Death Wolves to not need gang anymore, they kind of made them into a group of three solos, because now they don't really care whether the rest of the unit exists at all. So now you can kind of bait with one if you want, because you don't actually care if you lose one. It's nice to have them, but who gives a shit? Skull is very good. He's power 14 and he's got 2-inch reach. So if you chuck Stormrager on him and then you chuck Divine Inspiration on him, he's power 16 and he's got 2-inch reach and he's mat 9 and he's got Vengeance before you put Stormrager on him. So the typical setup is you have Death March on the unit. One of them gets hurt. The remaining two walk forward 3 inches. You load up Skull with 3 corpses from the pot, or 2 corpses because he's already got 1. You give him Stormrager, so Death March goes away. And then you give him Divine Inspiration, and now he's a mat 16 maniac with 3 corpses on him who goes in and kills the shit out of something. You can do the same thing with Call, if you wish, from Brigid and Call. Grail's Brigid and Call is very good for the same reason. So Grail's strength is, I like solos and single infantry dudes, and I don't particularly give a shit about beasts. So his beast loadout for me is typically just a pure blood plus some stuff. So
do you have a safety goat?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm playing Pure Blood and Safety Goat. Safety Goat being the Gnarlhorn, because he has Blessing of Earth, because I got sick and tired of people fucking crit freezing Grail.
Now fuck off.
Everybody crit freezes him. He's stealth and 15-16, and every fucker that walked up to him crit freezed him and killed him. So the Safety Goat is decent. 12 points, the Gnarlhorn. He's got a decent power on him now, and he's also got Counter Slam still. He's okay, and his Animus is good. The Pure Blood is there because, well, that way you can make your Lord of the Feast blessed as well.
Yes, because clearly the answer...
Because sometimes they have a death buff and you're like, I'm only rat 7, I might not be able to hit that. Oh, wait.
Yes.
Still so good.
In conclusion, if you want to cheat, just embrace the circle way and just have even more rules you ignore.
No, it's cool. You can also ignore Choir's Passage if you're Magic Bird.
Just magic. I know exactly what happens. So the Warp Wolf, the Pure Blood, basically has a whole bunch of glitter and just glitters at the bird, and the bird goes in and sparkles and gets through whatever garbage metal protection there.
Death Wolves are worth a little bit more conversation because they are a unique piece in the game. The only other thing in the game with the rule that they have is the Book from Menoth. And the Book from Menoth is a massive pain in the ass, and if you've ever played against people that use it offensively as a scenario piece when it's important late in the game, it is one of the most frustrating things in the world. The Death Wolves can do that, and there's 3 of them, and they're Death 14, and they can prowl.
Yeah.
So you can make a stealth dude who has 4 lives, effectively, who stands in the corner of the zone, and they have to hit a Death 14 model and kill it 4 times in order to actually get it out of the zone so that they can score. And that's a really strong ability. That's one of the things they can do. They can also shrug free strikes using corpses, so they can charge straight through shit. And they can also stand in the way of things that want to kill your caster or important models and just be landing zone blockers that require 4 deaths to get rid of them.
Something I'd like to point out at this point is that Death Wolves also benefit from the healing objective.
They do.
Massively so. Especially in Circle, you don't realistically need magic weapons that much unless it's matchup specific, and you certainly don't need Pathfinder. So therefore, the worst thing you could really do is you could try and shoot some Death Wolves. Don't do that. Have them use up maybe a corpse or two, and then have them heal up. And yeah, you'll probably do that once before, just like, it's just such a bet, feels bad.
The only time you waste attacks is if you literally, I'm going to waste attacks to get rid of corpses.
Yeah.
Which is not always a poor decision, it's just only if you really have the attacks to spare.
I kind of like the fact, and it's taken me a really long time to get used to it, that you don't care about the other unit members anymore. Because it used to be in Mark 2 that you needed gang for them to be able to do useful work. And so you spent the whole time like worrying that when they finally killed one or two, you were done.
Yeah.
Now you're just like, whatever, don't care.
Yeah.
Like, if you kill two, then Caleb is going to go in there with Storm Rager and Divine Inspiration and Blessed, and he's going to fuck your shit up.
Yeah, it's because they don't have the Overtake tied to, like, the guy who wants to use Overtake.
Now they just have Overtake. But they're Mat 7 instead of Mat 8.
So, they benefited where Great Bears lost a lot.
Correct.
So they lost one pal, and they lost one Mat over what they would have had with Gang.
Sure.
So they did the split difference type thing.
But one of the things that's... there's more limitation to options when you lose that kind of ability.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that frustrates me a lot about a lot of the things that I've ended up playing is that it requires base-to-base, which...
It's an annoying rule.
It is, because, for one, a lot of the models just don't let you do it.
Yes.
And another one is it limits how you can play things, and it can be incredibly detrimental. I mean, you get bonuses, which is what they're... It's a sacrifice you're making. It's
also another opportunity for you to accidentally fuck up, too.
Correct.
Yeah, but...
Particularly in tournaments.
But, I mean...
Especially when you're it's a choice. You're like, I guess then now not... Ace to base-ish, like this was meant to be a nice long chain.
I guess some of the things can see that guy behind them. Balls.
if, as I said, it's a choice. Like you're gaining something rather than and you're losing something. They got a net benefit, I think, in the end.
Yep.
Because they still got a buff.
Yes.
So they got +1 strength and +1 Mat, and then because they lost the +2, but they gained the infinite option of being it wherever they want as long as it's in command, because they don't need to be tied to each other.
6, which is annoying as shit.
But there's still only 3 guys.
Yes.
So.
And they have Overtake all day instead of losing it when one of them dies, which is good.
Yeah.
No, they are a very good unit. Lots of people don't rate them. I've always rated them. I think you should rate them now.
Anyhow,
I think they're an incredibly strong unit, particularly for Snorri.
Yeah. Anyhow, the reason I brought up Death Wolves is Grell is one of the best abusers of Death Wolves, as we discussed. Indeed. So now let's talk about someone who's a much bigger abuser of just Thon in general.
Someone who doesn't really give a shit about Death Wolves.
Correct.
Iona, the signature caster of the theme. And she deserves to be the signature caster.
The sorcery.
Iona, the unseen. And unseen, as far as I'm concerned, refers to the fact that I've never actually seen her do anything dangerous apart from when I played against Colin. And Colin wants her to do something vaguely dangerous and then gets killed for it.
And then she died.
And then she died.
I never thought of her name in that sense, because because she is just like, I'm going to be the buff caster.
Arian plays it that way.
No, it's not just
Arian.
Who
else has played it? It's just me and Arian, right?
I think I've seen Frawley play it once. Yeah. Although I might be mistaken.
Yeah, but Frawley is renowned as the best Frawley player. There's like, she's standing in my corner of the board and peeling your army.
And Jack? Did Jack play that?
No, Jack hasn't played it, So
Go for it.
I was going to say, from my experience against Iona doesn't have to do anything. She has a lot of very strong abilities that don't allow to risk. She can risk herself to get even more value, especially with Hunter's Mark. Like, Hunter's Mark is one of the abilities that, say, makes Bloodweavers actually worth considering, because it means that your off-board, like, threat range is just so much bigger. Phantasm, but, like, a lot of the stuff she actually does is just buffing, and she's quite happy to do that while hidden behind a forest. Like, Phantasm is just Phantasm and Shawfort is such an amazing combo of buffs. Typically speaking, I've seen you put Shawfort on your Ravagers so that they get no knockdown tough and depth 15, or you put Shawfort sometimes on your Wolf Riders, and you typically, I've seen either go 2 units of Wolf Riders and 1 unit of Ravagers, or reverse, so 2 units of Ravagers, 1 unit of Wolf Riders. And whatever lead units you're using, either one of them gets Phantasm, and the other one gets Shawfort, and they're both having the time of their lives. Because Phantasm is a really fucking good shooting buff, especially against factions that have ridiculous numbers. Like, you can play against random Rhett lists, Signar lists, Kador lists, whatever, right? Where if you will get shot by them, you're just dead, because the numbers they put out are fucking stupid.
But Phantasm just makes Gareth too sad.
Yeah!
No, the people that make sad are Rocketmen and
That too.
Blood trackers.
Yeah, blood trackers.
Blood trackers.
Oh, God.
Like that doesn't. They're like, range two, eh?
No, but it literally turns off his feet, in a way.
Yep.
If you just sit 5 inches away from his line.
It can
be a unit that comes in. Well, it reduces you by 5.
Yes. It can be.
It's like Stormwall.
Okay.
Yeah. But
Phantasm?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, Phantasm. I'm thinking of the other one, Countermeasures.
Yes. No, that's a whole different...
Yeah, that
she, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
That would be so...
Well, I don't know which Will still listening to this podcast.
Just write off all shooting armies if blood trackers get
Countermeasures. Or even, no, fuck it, put on the Wolf Champion.
Right, Phantasm is...
Yep.
Selected Storm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It has. Does it have some other effect as well?
Not particularly.
There's no other wording on it. I thought it had something else.
No, not really.
Okay. Cool.
Anyhow, from personal experience, the best way to treat Iona, as far as I'm concerned, is just think she's P-Scar with guns. Because.
Thankfully.
Yeah, she's
P-Scar with options.
P-Scar that works on both, right? Yep. And the reason why is that it's only +3, that's fine, because almost all Tharn will provide the remaining +2 somehow, right? Either Tharn Ravagers have Brutal Charge, Blood Trackers have Prey, Wolf Riders will jump behind their targets if they have shields,
and
their Weapon Masters, so they're fine, and of course Wolf Rider Champions, who fucking love that feat, have Backstab.
Mm.
Like, they effectively think of it very much similarly like how you'd think of Scar, except you've got the added danger that you have a bunch of thrown guns that benefit from this feat quite spectacularly. And the defensive component of it is just enough to get the Tharn just over the cusp, but they're not randomly dying to shit all the time.
It makes Ravages annoying. Like,
it does.
Really annoying.
Like, they'll still fall if you put a fucking heavy into them, except that you kind of don't always, because you have
access... Death 13 becomes actually relevant.
Yeah, because
point.
She has also access to her her Elite Cadre Dodge. And that Dodge Elite Cadre, from personal experience... If your match list wasn't good into Tharn, then this will very much tilt it. Like, it actually isn't great into lists specifically designed to counter Tharn, because they'll take into account the defense.
And it's only on a command now.
Correct.
So it's 9, which is good.
It means that, it's good, but it won't affect, like, the tailgating rabid, Wolf Riders on the edge. But what it will do is it means that any of your, like, unboosted attack, a lot of them are massively devalued.
Yes.
If they can't get through Surefoot, then... The Surefoot unit requires boosts effectively to hit.
Surefoot's a really good spell.
Exactly. And the non-Surefoot targets, like, you always have that question mark, right? Like, if you miss this thing...
If I fuck this up, do I lose the game?
Yeah, because you can just lose the game by letting a Ravager...
You have to think, right? Like, you most of the time you won't, but you've got to look at it and go, where can he put that person?
It's pretty bad, right?
Where can that guy go?
And, like, that guy can go a lot of places.
Yeah.
He can go in front of my charge range of a unit, like happened against me when I played against you, Colin. He can go and basically go around models, which I've seen happen, which usually means that the caster is about to get charged by a Tharn under Iona's feet. There's a lot of bad things that can happen. Iona is a numbers lady, as far as I'm concerned. She doesn't really do crazy stuff, but her numbers are insane.
I want her to do crazy stuff.
I think
which
her crazy.
Is why I think I push her a little bit too far on the front side because
I don't think she herself has to do crazy stuff because her Wolf Riders will do it for her.
But
and
they did some really interesting things with her. So number one, they made her Fury 7.
Yep.
Right, which matters for a variety of reasons. If you were just going to play her as a support caster and all she's going to do is upkeep 2 buffs, then Fury 6 would have been fine.
Yep.
So it means that her Hunter's Mark is actually hittable.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at it and you're like, well, you're Fury 7 and you've got Hunter's Mark and I can get a Tharn Ravager Chieftain who can make you Fury effectively 8 for your spellcasting. That's getting into the range of, you know, I don't even need to necessarily boost. And then they gave her Blood Boon. So then she has, like, an incentive to go stab someone so that she can Hunter's Mark someone. And then if you bring a Stalker, you've got Sprint. So now you're thinking, you know, if I charge someone, stab someone, Blood Boon out of Hunter's Mark, Sprint back, safe as houses, no worries.
This feels like a trap for Colin.
I want to
already planned it this way.
Because Colin's like, oh, look at all these janky toys. I'm going to shovel so hard. And everyone else is just looking at it going like, Colin,
if I just my table edge, then I'm fine.
Colin, back away from the shovel. Put the shovel down, Colin. It's not necessary. You don't need to dig your way out.
Yeah, there's nothing to dig out. The entire earth has been flattened.
So she does...
Colin just stares around with, like, shell shock, like, shovel in hand.
And he puts his shovel to the ground, like, he's immobile! Get him! And then a bunch of Demacral charged them, and then they failed because, unfortunately, one got countercharged, the other dodged.
To safety guard.
Because, no, it wasn't no. safety. There was no safety.
Ravager Chieftain. That guy's got countercharged.
Fuck that guy. And fuck his 14 plus damage.
Of course he does. Because fine.
Well, he doesn't have other rules, but now he has that. He doesn't have Overtake anymore.
Does he have Veteran Leader?
Yes, yeah, he's the one with Veteran Leader Tharm instead of Veteran Leader Ravager.
So he has
Ravager.
Veteran Leader Tharm and Countercharge. Pretty good.
He's and like, Hyper Regen or whatever the fuck the one is.
Everyone has.
Yeah, he is.
That's not worth mentioning.
Well, he used to be a I kill all of your infantry dudes because he had Overtake all the time, plus was Mat 8 and.
Unnecessary.
Yep.
Well, it used to be necessary, but not anymore. Now that the Ravagers do it for you, it's fine.
Now he buffs the Ravagers from behind.
Yeah. All right.
So Iona, I think she is slightly overtuned, but her design concept I quite like for me.
Yep.
I don't really like playing her as just a buff caster, but I can see why people do, because then she doesn't die, and that's probably good. But certainly, she turns Wolf Riders up to 11, she turns Wolf Rider Champs up to 11, Surefoot on Wolf Riders is bananas, Phantasm on Wolf Riders is also good. It's just that Ravagers are currently probably good enough that you just play double Ravagers anyway.
Yeah.
And then it's a question of, do I play Wolf Riders or Blood Trackers? And that's a hard question, and I think you probably play Blood Trackers.
Yeah,
You can afford a Wolf Rider unit as well, which you can, but then you start to run out of whether you get solos.
Yes.
And I think...
Because she also likes her Wolf Rider champions as well.
Really likes them.
They're
like, a lot.
And they're probably better than...
Like, they're really good.
They're probably better than the unit of Blood Trackers, and the unit of Blood Trackers are Power 14 Weapon Masters. Just for reference, that means that every one of them has
they need to boost.
Yeah, but every one of them...
The Wolf Rider champion is a double Weapon Master charging.
Okay. So you do realize that...
I think it rolls like 33 as an average damage roll.
Okay.
God damn it.
The average hit that every Blood Tracker puts out is effectively the same as getting hit by a rocket with harm. Or one of those
new... No, it's a boosted Power 14. Yeah.
Yeah, or one of those new steelhead cannons.
Yes.
Right.
It's like one-off being a Reckoner boosted.
Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's not bad when you get 11 of them.
And you might not want that because... You might not want that because you might want the Wolf Boys.
Pretty accurate, too.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Carl Rain or so with a reroll.
Well, good.
I also do have to mention Bridget and Cole, because if you actually manage to deliver Bridget and Cole to something under Iona's feet, just, like, wipe it off the table.
So they're a stupidly weird unit, right?
They're basically great-ish bears.
They're really, really good at one very specific thing, and then mediocre at other things.
I mean,
in fact, it's not even that they're mediocre at them. They'd be good at just being two dudes that hung around, except that that Cole could kill a heavy on his own.
Yes.
They were like, I cannot commit these two to do anything else because I really want him available to do that one thing.
It sounds like they're Sex Panther.
So they would be really more important, I think, if Ravagers didn't have the huge DPS they actually do. But because of that, like, if they were the I'm going to cash this unit, this pair in for like a heavy or two, because they can do that.
Well, they can get a heavy, but doing it is actually really hard.
Yeah, it's annoying.
I think. The weird part is, when I played them not to do that, when I played them to just, like, let her actually shoot shit...
She's actually very...
kill some stuff.
She's very fine. Yeah,
like,
she's,
at some point, you know, they still did what they were meant to do.
If anything, they're probably better. Like, for reference, right, the Cole's threat range is very static. Just, like, fucking measure that one
but
out.
It is 11.
It's good.
Feral, it's 14.
It's also through, like, Treewalker. That part, found, is very irrelevant. And, like, Bridget's bow gets way underrated
for what it
actually is. It's a very good bow. Yeah. It's a Power 10 Weapon Master blow. So, off feet, it is two less power than your Iona Blood Trackers hitting their prey. That's nothing.
It's a good bow. Like, they are a good two-person unit. They're hard to fit in because 7 points is...
They kind of compete with Death Wolves and a lot of other stuff.
Well,
but
he's free, so that's fine. He's always free.
What? Death?
Lord of the Feast.
Lord of the Feast?
You're never paying for him.
Of course not.
And weirdly enough, Iona is one of the ones where you probably don't take him.
No.
You can take him, and I don't think it's terrible.
Which is why I brought up Bridget and Cole, because I find in Iona, Bridget and Cole do Lord of the Feast's job. You can take Lord of the Feast as well, because Lord of the Feast, you probably don't take the Death Wolves then, because Bridget and Cole also like the Crockpot.
So she doesn't take... Death Wolves anyway.
Yeah. So you
and
take,
I'm not even sure she
takes. You
take
Crockpot. If you take the Crockpot, maybe you swing in Lord of the Feast if that fits.
I think
in.
She just takes four units.
She probably takes it. Yeah, she can do that as well.
I think more bodies, more better.
I think it is. Like,
anyhow,
you just,
like.
You get a spell.
She's a numbers caster.
Yeah.
Like, you do the math and you're like, oh, I can have a pot and I can do these cool things. And then you're like, or I could just have a unit of Wolf Riders in addition to my two units of Ravages.
Is this where you just play a Rusk and you're just like.
Yeah. You're like, all of this extra support is actually just, no, fuck it, I should just have
yes.
Units.
Yeah.
No, I win a guy.
Because she is all the support, right? Like,
exactly.
She's all of the support for that unit. She's like, one turn where effectively you get everything. Go.
And even the supporting turns, you're like, well, you know, you're still getting a whole bunch of
turn
other
by
shit.
Turn, she's still fine.
She's still yep. fine. Anyhow, Iona, if you, like, one of the things, we kind of skipped over Brad, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring up Brad is, Brad was your DPS guy.
Yes.
I think Iona is probably your better DPS guy.
If you want to play double farm, then you play Iona and someone.
X. And yeah. Whatever that X is fine. If you don't, if you bring Tharn specifically for deeps, bring Iona.
Yes.
If you want to do, if you want to do tricky stuff, then that's fine. We can talk about those stuff like Wormwood or Grail or,
yeah, sure.
Or Boulder One. Boulder One might be a comparable choice.
Comparable. She's better at it.
But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, Una, like Iona is just like... Again, like, do you want P-Scar, or do you want a bunch of janky casters that aren't P-Scar?
Mm.
Think about
because
it.
There's one thing Mark Choice told us, it's Gatsby 2 and P-Scar.
Think about it.
The correct answer is...
Yes.
So, yeah, I think Iona is a good choice. I think she is a solid option in any pairing.
And I don't run her outside of Tharn.
I don't think so.
No.
Like, they made her completely one-dimensional in that.
To be honest, right, a lot of these circle classes, and I do have to get into that, a lot of these circle classes are mono-dimensional.
Yeah, they're kind of theme-tagged.
Yeah. Like, Baldur 2 is probably one of the few ones that we've talked about that isn't, and the rest are kind
Baldur 2 is basically a Bonescaster.
Yeah.
Baldur 1, you can play in a couple.
Exactly.
Mosa, you can play in a couple. Kruger, you can play in whatever the fuck you want, no one cares.
Yeah.
Well, that's because he's options the guy.
Yeah, yes.
Correct.
Which we'll get into.
But later. Most of the others, there's like one or two themes you can play them in, and outside of that you're like, oh, this is not good.
And given the quality of circle themes in general, you're like, oh, I'll play it in the good theme things.
Yeah, so yeah. It's no coincidence that the casters that can play in Bones and Dodaro's Bones are the ones you play.
Yes.
The casters who are like, my favourite theme is Wild Hunt, you're like,
speaking of caster, speaking of a caster who doesn't play in Bones or Devourer's Sense.
No,
Kaya 1, Kaya 2, and Kaya 3.
Well, yeah, because
we
were talking about...
Kaya 3 can play in Bones.
She can.
She has synergy. She's just like a bad Brad.
Bad Brad. There's
yeah,
probably...
it's a pretty bad Brad, to be
yeah.
honest. Like, by
bad...
comparison, it's a pretty bad Brad, but it's still a bad Brad.
Like, the thing that Brad has is he has a threat extender. Once his feet's popped, he doesn't have it anymore. And that's
she gives you more Repo 3.
The nice. Listeners cannot see the thumbs up I'm giving Colin.
And she also
with
gives
both of my hands.
She gives Wald Weird's concealment.
I mean, she gives Wald Weird's Repo 3 is
yeah,
all I actually
and concealment.
Got out. Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, okay. Tell me about Kaya 1.
So, Kaya 1, I really liked in Mark 2. And I'm going to stand by that comment. She is a caster who is missing something. And she was missing something for the vast majority of Mark 2 as well. She really wants to play a hit-and-run standoff game, and that game doesn't really exist in any of the themes that are available.
She wants to play out of scenario. Forget even
yeah,
out of theme.
You,
just
you
know...
could play her. You could play her in Devourer's Host. She does nothing for most of the list. She would give you one unit with Occultation, and then she would give you a really fucking annoying Getarix.
Yes.
Now, outside of that, she would do nothing. That might be enough to make her playable in that theme. Because a Getarix with Spirit Door every turn, just dedicated Spirit Door bot, is probably a pretty good Getarix.
Yes.
Outside of that, her kit is based around having lots of heavies, basically. Like, it's based around having beasts. And unfortunately, because she doesn't have a damage buff, and because the efficacy of her debuff has been significantly reduced by the transition to Mark III...
Spirit Fang?
Yeah, it doesn't stop charges anymore. Mm-hmm. Because she lost the things in Mark II that made her playable, which was Blacklads and Accelerate, she doesn't get to play, really.
Yeah.
She's not terrible.
I think for what she is basically like a good battle box slash fuck around caster. She
has to play Living Beast.
Yeah.
Which is okay, and doesn't do it anywhere near as well as the casters that do it well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Speaking of the casters too well, I don't even know if that's true.
She does okay. Kaito is a good-ish caster in Call of the Wild. Kaya, in general, all three of her iterations are kind of tagged to Call of the Wild. There's not really a theme you can play them in You could play Kaya 1 in Secret Masters if Secret Masters gets a decent buff.
Yes, because you can have the stealthy...
Yeah, Stealth Druid Wall is still probably playable. It's not great, but it's probably playable. The Kaya 2 has Dogpile, which is a great spell. It's a really good spell. And she has an Arcanode that is probably the second best Arcanode in the game, maybe? Laris would be in the top few Arcanodes in the game, along with Cassius himself and a few others. He's a very easy to use Arcanode. He has a Animus that lets you be idiot-proof in your Arcanoding, but you need Shifting Stones. And so he lets her apply Dogpile, and Dogpile is good. Forced Evolution is a great spell. Remains a great spell. Works really well on lots of things. You could probably try to play her in Tharn just because of Forced Evo Gatorix is probably pretty annoying.
I'm starting to see a similarity.
Yeah, there's a thing.
If we basically have a model that we can...
If you can buff Evo Feast or you can buff Gatorix, then you can probably play into Arrow's Feast.
I'm also seeing, like, if you put a buff on Gatorix, or alternatively you can get Gatorix into Call of the Wild, then you're good.
Yes. So, she can play Call of the Wild. She's not a bad caster. I used to really like her. I played her a lot in Mark II.
She won a War Machine Weekend. Crump won it. He took it to War Machine Weekend 1. I was there.
Yep.
That was an interesting game to watch. On. Yeah, we were both there. I don't know if we knew each other then, though.
Yeah.
You weren't living here.
No.
So we would not
have. That was the last War Machine Weekend I went to before I left US. So she is okay. You can play her in Call of the Wild. If you really like her, then best of luck to you. She can play scenario okay. She's very easy to lose on scenario after just saying that she can play it okay. If you play her wrongly, then she loses on scenario very quickly. If you play her right, she doesn't lose on scenario, but she has the same problem as most of Circle when you're playing Living Beasts in that your trade is still not great. It's much better now once they reduce some of the costs than it was before, but it's still not great. You're rarely trading up with your heavies.
Well, that's what her feat's for.
Yes, and it sort of does that. Most of
the it's time. Supposed to like reset the game where you're ahead of the well. You get two if you play you right.
Threat them before it. So the problem is that you don't anymore. You used to. You don't anymore.
Sure.
Because you don't get black lads, or okay. If you do, you can't deliver them properly.
Okay.
So it's kind of if you just using Dogpile out threat your opponent's army, then you get two alphas, and that's great. One of the changes in Mark III basically was that those two alphas don't actually kill all of their shit, and that really leaves you with a bit of a problem. But either way, so Kaya 2's okay. Yeah. Kaya 3 is a very interesting caster. I think you can play her in Devourer's Host if you want to. She has the problem in that she really wants a big battle group because of synergy, and you can't really afford to give her a big battle group and still have enough Tharn to be really happy.
I'm gonna interject here. I think the main problem with all three of the Kayas is that they kind of want good lights that are living.
Yes.
And the problem is that the best lights are living are birds.
Yes.
And they have to... Then she directly competes with one of the casters further down the track, which is Una, who doesn't have to bother with any of this bullshit.
You mean like the bottom?
Wormwood is...
So Kaya 3 is better than Kaya 2 in Call of the Wild, I think. And she's better than Kaya 2 in Devourer's Host. And I think there is room to play.
I think she's also better in Secret Masters because a bunch of those druids have prowl. But
so she has some neat things. Her feat is pretty good for Tharn. So her feat is actually really quite good for Tharn.
Yep.
And it does let you do kind of janky shit because if you also have you've got a variety of things you can do with it that are kind of cool. She doesn't have an augmenter for infantry, which is a real problem if you're playing Tharn. But it's possible that Tharn can carry it anyway. So I'm not 100% sure that you couldn't just play a sort of double Wolf Rider plus double Ravager build or something with her, and it would probably be
playable. It'd be probably playable. I think her main problem, though, is that she's a synergy caster who's deliberately designed to be balanced, which means that she's pathetic and should be thrown away. And
so she
should just be turfed. It's fine. Sure. We don't have to talk about her anymore.
In Call of the Wild, you can play her with goats, and that's one of the things that I like about her.
Safety goats.
She likes safety goat. She likes ninja goat. She even likes the...
Punchy goat
nowadays.
Yeah.
And the changes to the beasts were positive all round. So stalkers are cheaper, everything's better. But I think still she probably doesn't do it as well.
And cards on the table. She also has to compete with Bradagus. And again, we skip past Bradagus, but Bradagus has a big advantage to me over Kaya, and that is Bradiga's a like threat extension he gets on his Waltz. Yeah. Honestly, I think Waltz are just better than most of the living beasts still.
They still are.
Bradiga's threat extension is idiot-proof. You just... Yes. Well, no, that's not really true.
It's close to idiot-proof.
It's close to idiot-proof. The on-approach part is pretty idiot-proof.
The return part can be confusing.
Yes. That's okay. If you just kill them, you don't have to worry about any of that shit.
Yeah, I think Kaya 3 is close to being competitively viable.
Yeah.
So she probably is. Chromak is our next agenda member.
Mm-hmm.
Chromak 1,
you played that for the longest time. I
played him a lot in...
I think my first game against you was actually against Chromak 1.
Part 2, I played him a lot. I didn't particularly... There were aspects of him that I didn't like, but I still played him a lot because he was a very good answer to Kricks. I have tried him a few times in Mark 3 and not found that I really liked him. But I suspect that it is probably time to wheel him out and give him another go. He has one of the best spells in the game. Bestial is an incredibly good spell. And in some matchups, it can just end
the game. It does accidentally shove off whole swathes of enemy armies.
It does. As long as he doesn't die. That's the primary problem. He also comes with Derek's.
I'm getting a Resnik 2 vibe with this guy. Sure. Like, if you're bringing Chromak 1, the reason I think you're bringing him, apart from Warpath just being good, Warpath is why you stay. What you come for is Bestial. You want Bestial in your pair. Bestial will do certain things in the matchups, like tell that Ron pair to go get bent. And tell
Zerkova 2 to go light out.
Tell Zerkova 2 that she just... Tell Zerkova 2 she gets to go back. She gets to go back to the jank basket where she belongs. Random aside, Zerkova 2 and the new wolves thing was pretty funny. I can talk more about that when we figure out what the final rules for that are. But yeah, if you've got Bestial, like, the whole point of it is basically to say, like, no, get fucked.
Yep.
And it's good. I mean,
he also makes for a good Getterix.
And Inviolable Resolve is another spell. It's another buff you can put on Getterix.
Yep. And he has Wild Aggression as well, which is also a good spell.
Yep.
So he has, and Warpath, obviously, which is a very good spell.
I think one problem here is, first of all, the themes. It has changed the game.
Yep.
And I think he doesn't have a theme he really wants to belong in. Or rather, he can play in Call of the Wild, but I wouldn't want him in Call of the Wild.
Yes. So he's one of the casters who... No, he plays a good Call of the Wild.
I don't want to play Call of the Wild.
He's a caster that actually wants to play a blended force. He wants to play half infantry, half base.
Yeah.
He wants three heavies and a good couple of units as support. And that's something that neither of the themes really want to give him.
He wants to give, like, some Invulnerable Resolve to some people and have them be good. And then he wants to have Warpath as basically his ace in the hole. He loves... Walled Weirds. Walled Weirds with Warpath are just the fucking mint. Like, they make so many attacks, and them being able to juke around and you being able to use one Walled Weird to trigger Warpath enough times to shift the other Walled Weirds up, it's all just mint.
So I'm probably going to start trying to play him at some point with Devourer's Host to see whether or not you can get enough of a battle group to make it worth it. Yep. I think two heavies is probably okay. I think you can play Stalker, Ghetto, and Agorax.
Yeah.
And the maths kind of works out. But either way, I'll give it a go. I think Chromak 1 is right on the verge of being playable. He really just depends on what the meta looks like. If there are people that want to sling spells, then he goes up in value dramatically. If there aren't, then he kind of just dirtles.
Yeah, because the other thing too, and I think he pays points for the fact he can flip out, and no one respects...
It's a fucking useless ability 90% of the time.
I'm looking at this, I'm like, wow. I died, one of the first games I played against Chromak 1, I died to him flipping out. I'm like... Why did I ever respect this guy and his capacity to flip out? I'm actually more terrified of the fucking Alice.
Yes.
Alice is not actually that much worse than Chromak.
Mat 8, power 14 is not what it used to be.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's not terrible, right?
Yeah. It can end a game.
It's like a good ace in the hole.
It's an 11-inch threat that you can sometimes...
Just like an Alice can do, up and But you do it. Actually pay for it, whereas a lot of people who have that capacity these days just don't.
13-inch threat.
Yeah, like a lot of...
He's a very old design.
Yeah, he is. Yep. He didn't change much between Mark 2 and Mark 3. No. Like, basically...
He was a real contender, though, back in Mark 2.
Yes.
Like, he was the Kricks answer.
Yes.
Yeah, again, one of the reasons why is, like, if your bestial is good, and it's really fucking good into crits.
Yes, super good into crits.
All right, Cromac 2, though. I love this guy. This guy would
I want to love this guy.
I
love the model. I love the concept. I love everything about him other than him on the table.
Right. Whereas for me... just
fucking dies.
The best part about him is that his model is ridiculous. Why does it have just well-drawn abs?
Yeah.
They look like they were penciled on or something.
Cloaks and all sorts of shit.
And then the second part I love is that he's basically a serial eat-and-run guy, so he literally, his game plan is running in, eating a bunch of people, and then running away before he has to pay the bill.
So he's Abby too?
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, but
unfortunately, unlike Abby 2...
Abby 2 functional.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, unlike Abby 2, he doesn't...
Well, that's because he's got a date, and his date just does not want to be there.
So my problem with him is he lost Warpath.
He never had Warpath. Cromac
1.
Oh, Cromac 1. Right.
If he kept Warpath...
Oh, yeah, sure.
Then he would be a very good caster.
Illegal.
So he has Carnage. Carnage is a good spell. It's not a great spell.
What happens if he got Overrun?
If he had Overrun...
Oh my god, no, fuck off.
Keterix would be the best Keterix.
Forget
he's got Overtake as well, and Carnage.
Forget that.
I quit.
Forget that.
I regret.
Forget that. He just do it on himself. He's like, okay, cool, I cast Overrun myself. I charge in, I eat someone, I then run into your caster, and I buy, like, a bit more
attack. More promotion.
Kill him.
So, Cromac 2... has Carnage, which is a good spell. It's an okay support spell for infantry. It's a good spell for Circle Beast because it means you can get away without Primal if you have the strength. The problem is he has no damage buff other than his feet, and you don't want to burn his feet when you're just doing random shit early game.
Yep.
So you kind of have this situation where I could send in this junky heavy, like let's say it's a Gnarlhorn. He's power 16. I can make him mat 8 because of Carnage. So I'll send him in, but if I don't primal him, then he doesn't kill the thing I sent him in on, and
so
then I'm kind of boned. So now I have to feat all primal anyway.
You should have had Insight.
That would have been interesting. If
that
you
would
give
have
him
been
command
pretty...
10 and Insight, it would have been interesting.
I mean, is this command... I'm pretty sure his command is actually 3. Oh, no, it used to be like 3 or something.
I think it's command 8, isn't
it? Yeah, it's command 8 now.
So, look, he's got Carnage, he's got a bunch of spells that are all like those utility spells that pop up randomly on other people's cards as like an extra spell. Where you're like, oh yeah, you've got that spell, but none
awaken,
of them are good
awaken
spells.
Spirit.
He's got Awakened Spirit, which is on like Hexus
that's
or one of
the
Hexes or something.
I'm
like
pretty
that.
Sure it's Hexy one.
So he's got that spell. It's an okay spell. It's not that great in Call of the Wild because you've already got discount costs on your Animi anyway. I guess it would be okay if you're throwing him in some other.
He has Primal Shock, which is on Arcadius.
Primal Shock is a fucking weird
spell. It's on Doomy 2,
yeah.
Thank you.
It's on a couple
it's
of casters,
on Doomy 2 as well.
And it's a okay spell. I tried to work out ways to make him good with it. It doesn't seem to work. The math just
and he has
What's the base power of your... What's the base strength
normally
of your models?
10 or 11.
Oh, okay, so Trolls are base 12.
Yes.
Yeah. And then if you have a Colossal, it's nice.
We warp the strength. That's not base strength.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, that's
not...
In trolls, it feels fine.
Oh, wow. So, Safety Goat and Jumping Goat. Like, Safety Goat definitely...
Jumping Goat's 10.
Safety Goat's 12, so
yeah.
There you go.
Safety Goat might be the strongest of the lot.
He actually is. Wow, he's stronger than
11,
a Riphorn. Why is he stronger than a Riphorn?
Or you use...
It's got...
Gargantuans and trolls because they have like base 16 or something.
So you can do that with him.
All right.
And he has Vengeful, which is only useful really on the two Gargantuans.
Yep.
So
it's primarily useful.
What does Vengeful do?
Retaliatory strike. And it's primarily
which is relevant on the bird for the memeing of zzzzt, down goes your cortex.
Yes.
And it's relevant on the Wald Wrath for the, hey, 4-inch AoE of everyone gets knocked down, which is pretty neat.
Those are both really good.
Unfortunately, his feat doesn't work on non-living beasts.
Yes.
So when you take the Wald Wrath, you're like, I just lost the main reason I was taking this.
So all you're saying is he doesn't actually mind taking a Zapdos.
He wants a Velociraptor.
He has always loved a Velociraptor. He's always loved
Zapdos.
He's always loved the bandwagon bird.
The meme Velociraptor.
The meme Velociraptor bird. Anyway, so what he wants to do is deliver multiple heavies into the enemy line as an alpha and then feet over the top of it and go, ha ha, check out my armor 19 Warpwolf Stalkers. Now, there are two problems with this strategy.
Did you just say
one,
that in
you're on the 19, at which point you still die. But two, you don't out-threat anybody, so you can't actually alpha, because you actually only have access to Hunter's Mark through Blackclads, and that's it. And if you can't make your Blackclads hit, then you're fucked. Because then you're just threat 11, and that doesn't cut it.
No.
So that's my primary problem with him, is that you, without a threat extender that is good, which is why I say if he had Warpath, he would still be functional. Without that, it's
boundless
really
charge.
Yeah. Well, he's just not... The buff from his feet is not strong enough for you to take an alpha. It's just strong enough for you to do crippling damage and then survive the retaliation. That's what it's designed for.
Yes.
But if you can't go into the
It feels like a CID is required for this.
If you wanted to, you would have to. But he's not that far off. So
no,
it's fine.
I agree.
Yeah.
But
you got to have casters that are weaker. If you wanted him to be competitive, then I think... Personally,
yeah,
I think a slight tweak through CID would get in there.
The other thing, too, is, like, he also still is, like, a power 17 Grievous
yes.
Wounds guy with...
He himself
tokens.
Is awesome.
Yeah, that's why I like him.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I think
well, he's a coach of...
He's
or a mad dragon.
He's a butcher.
He's a butcher. But unlike Butcher, Butcher doesn't have access to sprint. He does, and that's
yes.
why I like him, is because he
yes.
just go in, he can, like... Again, he's like, I'm going
to
eat
so
this, I'm going to eat this, I'm going to eat
yes.
this.
You need him to do work
yep.
for you to win.
Correct.
So he's McKay.
No, he's not any of those guys.
No. He's Cromac too.
He's Cromac too.
He's the Big Mac.
Yes, he's the Big Mac. Biggest
That's
Mac.
That's disgusting.
It's his name.
It's not, it's Cromac too.
I mean, if you really want something, sure, call him like...
Champion of the Worm.
So next we have hit the Mac... No, not the McCaters, the
no.
Krugers. And we've hit the Krugers.
Sure.
There's two of them. I keep thinking there's three of them because I want there to be a Kruger 3 on a cloud, and it was a thing that everybody talked about for a while.
Now it'll be Kruger 3 on a dragon.
No,
on a mean bird.
Or on a bandwagon.
No, no, because he's drawing the dragons. He's going to be dragon related.
What if it's a dragon looking bird?
That could happen. Dragon looking birds are a thing.
Half meme raptor.
A simurg.
Half
meme raptor, half archangel.
Half bandwagon dragon.
Oh, awesome.
Yes,
both of those are awesome. He gets his act.
He's riding a blighted storm raptor.
Nice.
Yeah,
I like it.
Ship it.
All right,
and then you get your huge base caster.
So let's talk about that Kruger though. Let's talk about Kruger 1.
There's two Krugers, right?
There's
Kruger 2 is the easy one for me to talk about because I don't play him much, and it's weird because he has all the things that you would think would make him a caster I like, and for some reason
I just don't. Talk about Kruger 1 first because I can talk about Kruger 2.
Going to brush over him and call it a day.
Yeah, well, that's probably not acceptable given that he's...
Come on. Europeans have got podcast after fucking podcast sucking all over Kruger 2.
I mean, we literally did that.
Yeah, so we need to jump in and get those EVs.
No, that's not...
You do that.
No, Chris.
I'll play
you. No, wait. Chris, we did a Menoth podcast, and Jack goes, I guess we don't need to talk about Harvey or Hieroclaimer, because everybody's talked about Harvey and Hieroclaimer. And you're like, yeah, sure, that makes sense. They just did a podcast about that. And then Colin says the same fucking thing. You're like, Kruger 2.
You do realize that...
doing background work in Tomage.
Yeah,
okay.
You did also realize that I basically fought to get any tooth and nail and get some talk about Hieroclaimer, despite Jack not wanting to talk about before the Super Series, which I will point out he won.
So, I will say, Kruger 2... Good caster. Has lots of options. Works really well in Bones. Is probably playable in Devourer's Host if you wanted to play him in it, because Stormwall is a good spell. I don't think it's his optimum build. I would suspect that Bones remains his best build. You can also play him in pretty much anything you want, to be honest. He has a threat extender through TK, and also Gallows if you want it. He has a good... anti-shooting option through Stormwall. He has a good scenario feat that is also a good attrition feat. He is a generally good to great caster, and people love him. I find him not as good as I would like him to be, and not as fun to play as I expect him to be. Particularly since the double port change. That was basically when I stopped playing Kruger 2.
Right, from my personal experience, Kruger 2 is the one caster in the game you cannot beat at Theory Machine. Now, what fucking happens, Kruger 2 will always come up with some kind of bullshit excuse as to why he doesn't lose to your dumb combo. So it's like, oh yeah, but I got Rebuke, or I got a feat, or how about I just kill you instead?
So he's Mark 2, Haley 2, and Bradagus.
Kinda, yeah. So if Haley 2 was better than Kruger 2 at Theory Machine, this is important. Like, the Theory Machine wars, you always could say, but I'm playing Haley 2, so I make you activate in the wrong order. And then Kruger 2 is like, damn it, you got me. Now that that one weakness has been removed, Kruger 2 can reign supreme over Theory Machine Wars. Colin described it decently well. Like, he's just super fucking flexible. He can run pretty much anything. I think the reason why Bones is the best list for him still. I'm not going to count dumb meme lists with Secret Masters, even if they did win stuff, because I just can't. Like, when you get down to it, the Bones gives you the flexibility you want. It gives you a list which is kind of actually not the best on numbers, but it is the best on basically pissing off your opponent. That has to count for something. But it also just gives you all the flexibility you want. Bones of Olboros plays very similarly to, like, those kind of old-school Heli 2 lists where you didn't really have the best answers, but for some reason, despite the fact that your list wasn't optimized for damage, you still killed everything. Just slowly and painfully, and your opponent was kicking and screaming all throughout. Kruger 2, he's a guy. I think that he is the guy.
I'm really glad we took time to do this separate section.
I'm running out of stuff to talk about just, like, before I'm giving well, because, hatred.
Well, literally, talking about Kruger 2, you could do an entire podcast because he's literally the options guy. Because he has TK and a bunch of other really fucking phenomenal spells that just allow him to do a lot of really crazy things. Like Ron or Haley 2 back in the day, yeah. Where TK just allows you to do stupid things, and the fact that you can take a bunch of wolves that can also cast TK just makes it even more, like, insane.
Like, yeah, Kruger is the options guy. Like, even though I just shitted on Secret Masters, at the end of the day, it did win War Machine Weekend, and with good reason. Like, if Kruger is going to randomly die to people like Kara Sloan and other kinds of gunline casters, then removing that one last weakness is pretty fucking good. Also, if it turns out all you need to win a game is a meme raptor, a storm raptor, which turns out is quite good into low Cigna, then having a storm raptor that also has access, you know, has storm wall protecting it and guiding it up the table is really good. I think with Kruger, if you're playing him, we're probably the wrong podcast to listen to someone who cares more about Kruger, since my only circle guy here really doesn't, and cares about more important things in life, like Grail.
Agreed. I care about lots of I care like about Grail. Kruger, I just don't care about Kruger 2. I don't dislike Kruger 2 at all. I acknowledge that he is a very good caster. I just don't have a lot to add because I don't play him anywhere near as much as most of the people that play him a lot do, and he's a caster that rewards playing him a lot.
Did he change much from Mark 2?
Yes, he got Rebuke, but
he lost the counter to charges on his feet because yes. The speed doesn't stop charges.
Because I was just going to say, if you want to know about Kruger 2, just go back and listen to Moop's old podcast, because they talked about it.
It's hard because a lot of that required double stones. A lot of that required a lot.
And that's why I said. Yeah. That's why I said. Did he change much? And the answer is yes.
So the faction changed around him, yes. And he
lost
the
some game tools.
Rules changed around him, and then he gained Rebuke as a sort of.
He also gained immunity to electricity, which again,
yes, and immunity to electricity for everyone within 9 inches of him, which is pretty good.
Again, so no, we can't just point him towards Moop's old podcast, and he.
Yeah. No, you can point him towards European podcasts, sure. and various others. He's very good in.
All right, Tomaj, I'm going to say, just put us out of his rate. Do a fucking Kruger 2 podcast if you have to. Kruger 1, though, we can talk about at length.
If you're listening to us about Kruger 2, you should just hit up Tomaj. Just find him on Facebook and hit him up. He loves people. He loves everybody. Have we got his phone number? I think we do, don't we?
Yes.
I think it's +32 457 831 623. And his email is tomaj@hotmail.com. So I'm just filling up with extras. TOMAJZ. He was trying to do something weird with this whole Jay-Z thing back in his youth.
Okay. Kruger 1.
So Kruger 1 is a caster that I have always kind of liked. And Mark 3 saw him get a spell that is unique to him. Gale Winds is the spell, and it's kind of the defining spell, and the only reason really that you take him
over Kruger 2.
Over anyone. Without that spell, he would not be a good caster.
Kruger 1 and Kruger 2
3 defense against range attacks.
And magic.
Kruger 1 and Kruger 2 might as well be completely different casters. They've always have been.
So Kruger 1 has a couple of good spells and a feat that used to be decent and is now basically terrible unless you hit the one matchup in the meta that's worth it. His feat is the biggest problem with him now because his feat is in some games completely non-functional, just doesn't do anything at all. It is drop 3/3 each AoEs and you hit everybody under them with a power 10. The meme raptor makes that potentially better. You can make it a power 12 because it's an electrical damage roll. And the same goes for a lot of his spells and his guns and stuff. You can buff all of them with the meme raptor. So the meme raptor can definitely go with him. he's one of the casters that can play it, particularly because it has an actual base defense of relevant for a Colossal, and he turns it to defense 15 against shooting and magic, which is genuinely relevant.
Yes.
Stat. Agreed.
So
between that and the fact that you can hedge in against Weapon Master Infantry, one of the traditional weaknesses of a Colossal, and that it already has a minus 3 range baked in, which is pretty decent.
So he's got plus 3 def on everybody in his control area. It also clears all clouds immediately when he casts it. And it's plus 3 def against ranged and magic. It's not against melee, obviously. That would be bananas. So it's a good delivery spell. It was what I used when I was playing Tharn before Devourer's Host became a thing, because it makes all of your Ravagers def 16, def 18 if you can find concealment, because it stacks. And now, under the new changes, it makes your Wolf Riders def 18, and def 20 if you can find concealment for them.
Def 21 against living that they're engaged
with. Yeah, sure.
Somehow.
Well, no, because... And gunfight. Also being shot at. So gunfighter living models that are winning on each of them.
If, you get, no, charged, so, if you get charged by a cane too, you'll thank me later.
Relevant.
Yes.
So nice. it is really important. The plus 3 is a big deal for a lot of the models in Tharn. So going to def 17 for Death Walls is a really big deal. Going to def 18 for your Wolf Riders is a big deal. 17 for your Blood Trackers and stuff is less of a big deal, typically, because they're normally dying to blast at that point. He also has Lightning Tendrils, which is a great spell for Wolf Riders and Blood Trackers. So for Wolf Riders, it gives them range 2 on all of their weapons in melee, and it gives them Electro Leap on all of their weapons, and since they have 2 melee attacks and then a gun, you can do all sorts of crazy shit in terms of delivering Electro Leaps to stupid places. If Electro Leaps do anything... which is kind of the story of Kruger 1. If Electro Leaps do anything, then you're probably going to be in a good place. If Power 10s do nothing against your opposing army, then you're going to struggle. Because he has no damage buff, he has no real hit buff, he has nothing that really does anything to things that are high armor. He is entirely dependent on his army doing that.
The reason
that's the biggest issue for him.
The reason I remember you even playing Kruger 1 in the first place was you came to the conclusion that, look, if you're playing Tharn into a matchup where you actually need that kind of high-powered things, you're not dropping
You shouldn't Kruger. Be playing Tharn.
You shouldn't be playing Tharn. So if you are going to play him into that matchup, you must as well take the guy who just pushes it to 11, which is Kruger 1 in this case.
Yeah, so it was the idea behind it then was that if they were playing anti-infantry into you, which was one of Tharn's biggest weaknesses, then at least you could survive to deliver. And that is still true. And what has now happened is it's now kind of ludicrous in the sense that now you can actually just ignore anything that's power 10 or power 12 range. Because the odds of them managing to hit you and kill you are just basically nil.
I mean, and now you say that, for instance, like the blood trackers at def 17 is not quite relevant. That's sort of true, because one of the other ways you clear blood trackers that isn't AoE-less is sprays. Yeah. And most sprays do not have power 17. Yeah,
correct. Gale Winds shuts down enemy sprays really, really. It's a very good way of...
My suppressors out. Were the saddest I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, so, and my tank.
Yeah, you're I remember it killed two models because you rolled two boxcars, basically.
Yeah.
And that was like, well,
legit.
So Kruger 1 is definitely worth considering, particularly if you have a meta where there is any matchup that you see commonly where Power 10s can do work. And Krix is one of the most common examples. So if your meta has a bunch of people playing Krix with infantry, whether it be Banes or Styxus or whatever the fuck you want, it's at its least powerful into trolls, like undead trolls, I guess.
Slaughter Fleet.
But into all of the other ones, it's exceptionally good. And into Statixas, it's one of the best clear methods in the game. So
even into Slaughter Fleet, I think it's just fine.
It still gets rid of the cloud wall. It still does all the shit that's annoying as fuck. And it still kills them.
Most trolls are still, like, they're not...
Armor 15, 16.
Yeah, they will still die.
Yep. It's a decent feat into armor 15, 16. It just falls over as soon as they get to, like, armor 18, at which point you're rolling 9s to do any damage at all, and it's just bad. Yeah. Don't play it into Armored Core. It's real sad.
Do play it into Armored Core. I need free wins. I need more free wins.
So Kruger 1, just bring a list with Lord of the Feast just and a damage buff, and you'll be fine.
That is worth noting. His Lord of the Feast is one of the funnier Lords of the Feast. It's not the best... But if they did bring infantry that dies to power 10s, then he does kill a lot of infantry.
So I would just find his Lord of the Feast as like an anime Lord of the Feast, because when he swings his sword like an anime, lightning explodes everywhere, and it's earth-shatteringly great, and then all of the mooks just die or get vaporized and everything, and Lord of the Feast strikes a cool pose, and then step 16, and then presumably dies to something.
Critical One really wants to play into shit like Winterguard. He loves playing into Winterguard.
Yes.
He's just like, this is the best thing in the world.
This is the best day of my life. It probably surprises because he just does
possibly. Possibly, but he has a great time. right up until he loses.
It's a fantastic time.
Right up until the field gun knocks him down on a 12 or something stupid, and he's like, oh, I'm a bitch.
The best time is not longer the best time. It's now the worst time. Yes.
It is also interesting that Gale Winds is one of the few spells in the game that can make being knocked down still relevant. You can still have a relevant death. If you've got Gale Winds and you're behind a wall, for example, then you're still sitting on death 12. So it is a weird spell. It's a really good spell. I would encourage using it. Getorix at death 17 against ranged is pretty cool. And most of the heavies like Lightning Tendrils as well. And of course, every now and again you run into Signar and Lightning Tendrils is pretty funny there. So yeah, I like him. He's a good caster. He doesn't get that much use. I think he is a good caster for Devourer's Host. I think he's pretty shit in most of the other themes at the moment.
Yeah.
That's fair. I agree with
he did more work in that fair.
Statement.
All right. Mossar, the Jank Lord of...
Yes.
Like, someone had to take it. I think Grail is a bit too, like, not hipster anymore. So Mossar has to take the job.
Mossar is a really interesting and very hard to play well caster. Primarily because pillars are a very interesting and very hard to play spell. So there are multiple aspects to Mossar. One is he has one of the best and weirdest assassinations in the game. Devourer's Host enables it very well. Even Wild Hunt enables it very well. If you take a Wild Argus with him, and if this is new to you, then you're not playing Circle, I guess, since Mark 3. But if you take a Wild Argus with him and you Sands of Fate, like you can basically run any infantry model to within 2 inches of their caster, Sands of Fate, to within 2 inches of their caster, make their caster death 5, hit them with whatever the fuck spells you want, and then shoot them with anything in your army. And it's a very, very... It sounds kind of weird from that sort of conversation, but if you have ambushing Wolves of Orbros or ambushing Bloodweavers, and they are now running 14 inches from 3 inches onto the table, and you got a 2-inch threat from the end of that, you're effectively threatening 19 inches from both sides of the table to their caster to turn their caster to death 5 at any turn of the game whenever you want. And that's... hard to avoid.
This is one of those assassinations where it's better, because Mossar is pretty anemic in terms of his damage, it is by far the best when you tell your opponent incessantly about how you're going
all
to kill
the
them.
Things that you do.
All the things.
So, I think he's interesting because, and I haven't actually had a chance to play it much in Devourer's Host. I think he is interesting in Devourer's Host for a variety of reasons. One, you can do something really janky with him in multiple themes. Bones is the easiest one. Where if you take 2 sets of stones and 2 stonekeepers, you can deliver him to wherever the fuck you want him, top of one. In Bones, you can hit their deployment line with a crevasse, if you wish. In Devourer's Host, you can hit their deployment line with... I think you just missed their deployment line on the top of one in Devourer's. But you can do all sorts of crazy shit that way, if you wish to.
Can you please explain this one? Because this one was rather funny for you to go into.
So... he has Sands of Fate. Sands of Fate lets him go to a friendly living trooper, like friendly faction living trooper model. In Bones in particular, there are only 2 friendly living trooper models in the entire list, no matter how you build it. The max you can have is 2. And that's not technically true. There's the leaders for the stone wall shrimp. But anyway, the 2 that are relevant are the 2 stonekeepers, because you can use 1 set of stones to port the stonekeeper from the 1st set of stones. And then he can port himself, because that's not counted as an actual teleport, it's a different rule, which puts him 16 inches up from your deployment zone. Mossar can walk to within range and Sands of Fate to him. You have a 2-inch extra deployment zone in Bones of Orbros, so it puts you 18 plus the 6 for the advanced deployment plus the 7 for your... Sorry, it's a 13 plus 18 is 31.
Yeah,
and
31.
The range on crevasse is 8 inches, so you threat to the 39-inch line to deliver your first crevasse.
Which is 1 inch into their deployment, you could probably get... I'm sure there's a +2 inches there somewhere. It's Circle, I think, like the Wilder has it or some shit like that.
So you could take Bone Grinders.
Bone Grinders have it, yeah.
How you do it if you're doing it in Varus Host, because you can't get the +2 from there.
Yeah. Anyway.
But once you get there, you can deliver that, and then you can still get out, because the Stonekeeper from the previous unit is still in range for you to teleport back to.
Yeah.
So you get 1 boosted crevasse into their line, which in some matchups might be relevant, in some matchups might not. If you do it in Devourer's Host, you can actually get 2, as long as you don't boost, on account of the fact that you can have the little lady that reduces the cost of one of your spells by one. So if you want to play super jank, you can do that for the top of one. If you want to play moderate jank, you can take a unit of Wolf Riders, give them Mirage, and now they have a turn where they can Mirage 2, Walk 9, Jump 5, Repo 5, and then he can teleport to wherever the hell any of them turned up. So if they start their turn, they can move 21 inches to wherever they want to be, including a jump and a place, and then he can teleport to literally any of them. So if any of them can make it within 2 inches of an enemy caster, you can always then trigger the Wild Argus onto that caster, turn that caster down to death 5, tag it with your own spray because that's not part of the deal, which is a power 13 spray, and then hit it with a spell if you want as well. And if you want to do it around the other way, you can Curse of Shadows them and then hit them with your spray. If you want to port back out, it gets a little bit more murky, but if you're going all in, then you can put a significant amount of damage onto someone. So if they're a low armor caster and they're a war caster in particular, you can have a pretty decent assassination run just using Mosar himself. If you've got a second unit of anything that can apply shots to the defense 5 caster that's now standing there, you can do a lot of work. So I think that's an interesting aspect of his game. That said, outside of that, his entire game revolves around the use of Pillars, Crevasse, and Curse of Shadows. And because there are no good arc nodes that are commonly available in Circle, and you're stuck using either Trees or Sands of Fate in the case of Mosar, which is a super expensive arc node,
yeah.
You've got this weird situation where using Crevasse is kind of hard. It's except in, you kind of use it more in Bones than you do anything else.
Because it's very good to arc from your Wolds.
Yes.
Your Wolds,
it's a great Wall Warden spell. It's just not a great caster spell if you don't have an arc node.
Yeah.
Sands of Fate is a good spell, but it's hard to use unless you are using it for an assassination. Pillars is a very good spell, but also a very bad spell, and really hard to work out when it's good and when it's bad and how to use it. It's a super difficult spell to use. It's much more usable in casual games where you can just burn the time to try and work out what the fuck you're doing and then revise it if you get it wrong. In tournaments, it's very unforgiving. If you get it wrong, because of the nature of the spell, you're using it to give yourself an advantage, and if you then play your turn assuming that that advantage is real and your opponent finds a way to get rid of the pillar, then you just die. And that's the end of the game.
Or you just lose something.
Yeah, you lose a heavy, or you lose something important something that you really didn't think you were giving away.
Like, there's a lot of uses for pillars. Like, for instance, if you're up against, like, Kruger 2, for instance, you can use pillars to stop the block the, like, push, and you'd be like, I'm safe. And then Kruger
nothing
goes, like,
could possibly go wrong.
And then Kruger is like, aha, but I'm the master of theory machines. I'm going to port this guy here. I'm going to TK him. He's going to aim. He's going to kill your pillar. And you're like, and then I'm going to walk up and
yeah, it becomes it is very easy to accidentally lose using pillars. It is, you can do some of the best things I've ever done in War Machine have involved like creative use of pillars and making it work in a way that shuts down the game, particularly in the late game where your opponent has very, very few attacks and it's much easier to work out what you can and can't kill.
Yes,
but it's a hard cast.
I think also Mosar has a shit thing.
Yes.
He has a shit feat. So he really needs...
If he had a really good feat, like a really good feat, he would be a very interesting caster.
I agree. Because, if he had something that was more applicable, then his feat would mean that he'd basically... You could afford to run all that jank because you have the rock solid backing of just a steady feat. But in this case, all you're down to is jank. And finally, I'm going to have to ask you to explain how Lord of the Feast and Pillars work.
Shoot a pillar,
really.
And then you teleport to it?
No, but you can charge pillars.
Yes, you can charge.
Okay, so here we go.
So you can place a pillar at the limit of the Lord of the Feast charge range, whichever limit you go for. If you put Mirage on him at the start of the turn, like on the previous turn, then obviously you can add another 2 inches to it. His natural threat, because they gave him +1 speed, is 11. So with the Mirage, it's 13. You can put the pillar wherever the fuck you want.
So 15 inches.
So he charges to the pillar and then shoots. So now he has moved effectively 13. He shoots 10, so he can go to a target that's 23 away and drop to the back of that target and then do his normal thing.
Because he didn't use his charge attack.
Yes, normal killing frenzy. And before anyone asks about this, yes, you can charge a pillar.
Yes.
Because it's an...
They are not an enemy model, but they can be charged.
Yep.
So they're not a friendly model, which means that they don't trigger the you can't charge friendly models clause. But they are not an enemy model, so you can't Hunter's Mark them, which made me very sad. Because that was my solution to cloud walls.
Install Hunter's Mark.
Tag them with a Hunter's Mark and then charge through Hayley's clouds and punch her. That was the goal, but I wasn't allowed to.
Things that you only discover in the Sydney meta. Well,
also, you can't turn them, you can't use them as cuirass targets because they're not a model.
No, they're not models. That I knew because that would be rather.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be really stupid.
There's also some weird clauses on not models. Luckily, it's been ruled on, so it's not stupid.
You can assault them, which is neat.
You also can damage them and attack them. That is also neat.
So you can get around Hayley's thing by dropping a pillar behind her and then assaulting the pillar with your pure blood, who puts blessing on itself and then charges, assaults the pillar, gets into the cloud on the charge, and then sprays the fuck out of Hayley and ignores flux.
Nice. You really hate... Or, you know what? You could just take the bandwagon bird like everyone else is doing... And you can just...
Or Kruger 1. No clouds.
In fact, before we get into the next two casters, because I think they're pet favourites of yours, tell us about the bandwagon bird, or the meme raptor, i.e. the storm raptor.
It's an interesting model. It's a really beautiful model. I don't own one. I've proxied one multiple times, but I cannot say that I am an expert in playing the meme raptor, or the velociraptor, as I like to call it. It is a much better out-of-CID piece than it ever was before. It has a natural version of Stormwall baked into it that is decent. It's 3-inch, right, instead of 5.
Correct.
And its gun is now good. Some people still complain that you can't do the full shebang of all the things it wants to do. You can't Animus, buy all your shots, boost all your shots, do all your stuff. I think that's fine. It does do serious damage. I have always undervalued the power 10 that it bounces back on things that hit it. With the Animus, power 12, that's reasonable. That can do work. Interestingly, into farm, that's actually reasonable because it means that Ravagers that charge it might kill themselves with the initial charge.
Oh, you mean the Plasma Nimbus?
Yeah, rather than getting to buy another attack back. Its Animus is good. There's not that much in faction that uses it, which is probably good. If it affected large swathes of the army, that would probably be a problem. You do get a little bit of value out of it if you're playing Kruger 1 or Kruger 2. Both their guns and their spells, and in Kruger 1's case, their feet, are all affected by it. In Secret Masters, the Cav are affected by it, but I don't know that anyone's using them, even though they are. In Kruger 1, it affects the Electroleaps off his spell, Lightning Tendrils. And so it's... Right now, it is a good mobile gun platform beast that can, at a pinch, go in and kill shit. It still doesn't kill shit as well as you would like it to in melee, but it does have Disrupt on its beak, which is super good, and into the War Machine matchup is very relevant. So, if you're playing Una 1 and you've got Guardian Beast, then that means that if she's standing right behind it and they've got 1-inch reach, they can't physically get a jack onto it without triggering a attack back. But if they have 2-inch reach, they can, which is a bit of pity, but other than that, it can peck warjacks and disable them, which is good. It struggles into warbeasts. It struggles into high def. You really don't want to primal it, but sometimes you're going
to
have to.
Well, you say it struggles with high def, and that's true if it has to punch them in its shooting output. Like, it has to be said.
Shooting output is good.
Its shooting output is... Well, like with the other gun we were talking about, like, frankly, with Mosar, the threat of it energy pulsing is often way more dangerous than it actually
energy pulsing. Yeah, energy pulse is really interesting for it.
And so energy pulse is the Thunderhead ability, and it basically hits everything within 6 inches of it with a power 12.
Thunark.
Which can be power 14. Oh, yeah,
it's only the front arc.
Right.
It doesn't do a full circle.
But yeah, that's right.
Front arc. I heard Tharg.
Tharg.
That's the sound it makes.
So, like...
Tharg!
What the turkey often does is it basically says, all right, okay, look, I'm a turkey, I'm going to shoot you all day, but look, if you come into me, then you're going to get zapped on, and it's going to be very bad.
If you come into me with a lot of infantry, I'm going to clear it.
Yes. So, it often forces you to play around it, and honestly, it probably gives your opponent nightmares. Any guns that are range 12, any guns that are less than range 12 tend to have massive problems against it.
Yep.
Because dropping to 9, even assuming something like Kruger or Iona is not the helm, dropping it even further.
9
like,
is an awkward distance to have to be.
It's a very awkward distance from the turkey. The turkey's just happy to be like, well, welcome to my
Yeah, it's a good piece now, I think. I'll be interested to see what develops as we move forward. Devourer's Host is awkward because the cost of the bird is very high.
Yeah.
34?
It's 34. The main problem is that it costs 34 plus. You probably need a second beast.
Yeah.
Just for most classes. Yeah.
And it's...
Like, yeah. Iona probably can just get away with running one because Iona wasn't spending her spell fury casting.
And she doesn't need the heavy to do the work.
No.
Like, physically. It doesn't need the damage output.
I mean, Iona's quite happy for the Storm Raptor to just walk up and ping something three times with its gun and then zip away with 3 inches because it has deceptively mobile.
And just threaten to go in sometime.
And if you decide to do a thing that you can do into, say, Scar 1, which is, like, go into the list and basically clear out a bunch of her stuff before she feeds, she can go, like, okay, cool, but I got this dumb bird, and the bird is just really pissed off right now.
I don't dislike it. I think it is good. I'm really glad that it got enough buffs to be playable. Mm-hmm. I think it will see more play in themes that aren't Devourer's Host.
Yes.
So if any of those themes become good, then I think it will become a real...
and that is probably its biggest...
Call of the Wild and...
Secret Masters. Secret Masters. Even like...
Oh, it's probably not so much.
Even Wild Hunt.
Can you even take it? No.
No. Even you could probably play it in Wild Hunt.
I think Tom was making a campaign for it to be Una's signature beast.
Yes.
All
right.
More of one.
You can take it in Wild Hunt.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like,
I don't know why you would.
Well...
But you can.
Yeah.
Like, more of one.
If Wild Hunt became better, you'd be thinking about it more.
Morv 1?
Yeah, let's move one.
Morv 1 is good. So she got Mortality, which is a great spell.
Yeah, it is.
She got a unique, probably one of best in-game, but simultaneously also not spells.
Awkward in-game.
Like, on writing, it is probably the best spell in-game.
It's a +2 armor buff that also reses your models.
Yeah. Like,
that's pretty
fucking close to the best in-game, right?
Guys,
a single buff,
I mean,
that's about
there's
as good
so
as
much RFP in the game now.
Allow me to compare it. So, it's like Iron Flesh, except it works on any... Yeah, it just works on any unit.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be living. That could be relevant, but also...
Is Iron Flesh only affect living models?
No. Yeah. You can't high flesh constructs.
It's like inviable resolve, except you can be pushed, but now you come back when you die. So look, it's a really good spell. Harvest is still a decent spell. Her feet is fucking awful. Always has been. And despite their best efforts, it still is.
It's still good. Like, Morvana 1 is 100% paying the tax of having fucking amazing.
Yes, her spell list is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, Eruption of Life, Mortality, and Restoration, or whatever the fuck they
actually,
end up calling it, are great spells.
I think, honestly...
Harvest is a good spell.
Yep. If Morvana 1 and Devourer's Host didn't have the restriction on Wolves, then she would be the reason to put a restriction
she'd
in on
Wolves. She'd be a pretty good Devourer's Host caster if she could take Wolves in Devourer's Host.
She's still a pretty good Devourer's Host caster, but then she'd be a Devourer's Host caster with Archibald Mortality, just for kicks.
So...
I think of all the casters, even better than your favourite caster, Colin, I think Morvana 1 is the best for running Blood Pack.
Yeah, that's right.
Mortality is just fantastic.
Yes, Mortality is a great buff for them.
Also, your blood Witch Lady, Blood Shaman, that's what it's called.
Yes.
Blood Shamans love arcing that. And
they do. They're still not good at it.
They're good with it with Puppet Strings.
They're okay with
it. They're better at it with
Puppet Strings. I knew that much. Look, she is a good caster. I don't think at the moment I can find a way to make her great in terms of I can't put her in my top 3 or 4 casters. And I can't put a finger exactly on why.
I think it's the feat.
Well, the feat is... Yeah, the feat is useless.
Yeah, well, the thing is then, therefore, with no feat...
You're really relying on Mortality doing a fuckload of work.
And you can't always guarantee that. And there are casters... Let's be frank, there's a lot of casters that we've covered, and there's a couple of casters that we're about to cover that have great feats and great spells.
Yes.
Like Wormwood, for instance, Morvana 2, Iona...
Una 2.
And Restoration is still an awkward spell, even the way it is now. Like... If you have a unit of Ravagers and their armor 17 and they can come back, that's really good. They don't get to attack when they come back.
And most likely...
And then they die.
Most likely also, if your opponent knows where Restoration is, they kind of just try to ignore that unit, which is doubly so because you don't really want to attack the unit that has Vengeance.
Yeah, and you don't have a good way to tag with Mortality on things.
Mm.
And you struggle to tag more than one thing. So... It's I don't know. She's interesting. I think.
You know what? I'm going to actually say this. She would be an excellent Wild Hunt caster if Wild Hunt was any good.
If Wild Hunt was good.
Because she could take a waltz like she wants, and she could revive Skinwalkers, and Skinwalkers love just standing around.
If they were good, they'd be even better then. Yes.
I mean, if they were back to Mark II Skinwalkers, she'd be over the moon with them.
Yep. So it might require another CAD before she sees play.
Or someone might make her work in one of the three. Like, she's playable in Bones because you just ignore Restoration and you play Mortality and Eruption of Life. And Eruption of Life is a fucking good spell on Worlds.
Yes.
Can you revive the living guy in the shrimp unit?
Yes. But he's the only one.
Boom!
There you go.
Solved it. We've done it.
Correct. You get a unit of Armor 17 shrimp with one guy that can come back. Yeah. He already has sac points and the other things.
Yeah, but now you can... let him die and have him just come back.
You can't bring back the UA from the stone unit.
Okay, yes, but that's not what I asked.
No, you can't.
I asked if your shrimp could just be the thing that matters, because they're the thing that matters, and they die.
I think you can bring it back. I don't think it says grunt, right? Maybe it does.
It probably does say grunt. I'll be honest, it probably says grunt. No, okay, it 100% says grunt. So, no. Yeah, it's grunt.
Yeah, you can't bring it back.
Okay, then there goes my plan.
Yeah, you don't get anything.
Okay, so basically, Morvana 1, come back when basically Wolves of Orbros, like, get a CID. The Wild
Hunt. People will play her now, and some people will get good results. My problem is that the games where I think she'll be at her best are games that I think you could have won with any of the other casters in Laris Host. Because her feat, for it to be good, you need infantry on the table against you. And that's the same problem. And for Harvest to be
most people do not want table against you. Most people do not want to run infantry into against
them. And if they do, you could drop literally any other caster with Devourer's Host.
It's not a weakness of Devourer's
Host. Mortality is also... and I'd probably say this to round her out. I think Mortality is weirdly very much cheapened in Devourer's Host because of Lord of the Feast and a couple of the other models I think have, like, Grievous Wounds.
So the one, it does turn Ravagers. If the target is something that Power 15's kill, then Ravagers just fucks the whole unit.
Yeah,
like into Crucible Guard, fucking guys who have Carapace and Armor 16, like, if you tag them with Mortality and charge a unit with
the entire unit just vanishes.
They were going to die anyway.
Maybe not. Power 13s don't automatically kill them.
It means
you have to roll 8s to kill them, whereas now you're rolling 6s and then they just die.
It's more like, say, if you target, like, say, Errants, and, like, they haven't popped their mini feet up, and you just, the Errants just get...
But that's one guy. You're usually throwing the unit, and then it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, but you just throw one and get the whole unit.
Sure.
And then all you get to do is kill one, which triggers vengeance on the rest of the unit.
Why do I play this faction?
That's true for a lot of factions in that sense.
Yeah, like, but I mean, I don't want to play the Maul 1 with, like, Winter Guard, frankly. No. Like, it would just be a disaster. Bad. It'd be incredibly bad. Oops.
So you want to play Karchev? Karchev?
I don't know if Karchev is actually that much better.
I don't know.
Yeah, because Mortality doesn't work in multiple jacks. Because you're like, I'm Mortality, that one! Alright.
I mean, you probably just win on scenario that one. So let's talk about
Morv 2 got back some of what she lost.
I wonder whose fault that was.
Well, she got hammered pretty hard, but she got a lot of it back. So she's back to, actually, I'm not sure if she got back Reach 2.
I don't know
if she did or not.
She actually did. Holy shit, she did.
Because I remember Tom saying, hey, you can go back to charging people with Morv 2 again.
Well, that's nice.
She got back range 2, which is good. That was handy for her. Stalkers are better than they were, which is good. That's handy for her. Her Scales of Fate went back to full control, which is a very big deal for her. The actual weirdest big problem that she still has that was the biggest change in retrospect from Mark 2 to Mark 3 is that she can't transfer damage from Scales.
Yeah.
That was made a massive difference that to was her damage output.
Yeah, but that was also absolutely ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was. And without it, it's actually not as good an ability at all. It's still a very good ability, but it very rapidly becomes untenable. Yep. So you have to bring healing now outside of that, that you didn't really have to before. You kind of got bonus healing that just made it even better. Whereas now you need that healing because otherwise you just can't use Scales of Fate because you just run out of health.
Wow, so it's almost balanced.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, correct. So she is better than she was before the CID by a significant margin. Sentia became a playable spell. You will occasionally cast it, whereas you never did before. Her feat is basically what it was. It's just not what it was in Mark 2. So it's basically what it was. It didn't change through.
It doesn't give you the ability to attack with Blood Tracker.
You can't bring back Solas.
Yeah. Which is important
the
because
change in the change from Mark 2 to 3.
Yeah. Because it's important because you can't bring back like Wolf Champions.
Gallows Groves.
Yes. Those
that was the killer.
That one, I wonder whose fault that one was.
That was multiple people's fault, but Moops can have credit for that one.
Alright.
He was the one who did the top of turn one blow up their deployment zone with my Gallows Grove that I fitted on. So he can have credit for that one. But yeah, no. Look, she took a lot of hits going to Mark 3. She is now back to being good. I think she's probably very good. You could play her in Devourer's Host. I'm just not sure that she's as good as Iona in Devourer's Host. And I think she does some of what Iona wants to do because her biggest pull really is twofold. One, she has a damage amplifier, which is now nowhere near as good as it used to be.
Yes.
And she has a defensive side, which is combination of everybody gets concealment followed by everybody comes back again.
Yeah. I think she's more of a, I throw this term around a lot, but a bit of a gear check. Like, if you have RFP, it is quite relevant against her.
It is. I think, so, it is and it isn't. Now, because the Tharn dropped in price,
yep.
You actually, even if you RFP an entire fucking half of a unit or half of every unit, she'll still bring back probably 10 models. And that's about her limit anyway, because if you've done any scales of fading, you're probably not on more than like 11 or 12.
Yes.
So
she's really hoping she gets a lot of damage out of that carnival.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. It used to be, I noticed when I played her that it is much harder to have enough health for the feat turn.
Yeah.
If you've played the way I used to play. So you have to change the way I used to play and not play anywhere near as aggressively in terms of rerolls.
Yeah.
And that makes her significantly less good because she used to get a massive advantage.
She used to go down quite comfortably to like...
I used to sit on 2 or 3 health.
Yeah.
And that meant that I had probably 11 rerolls because every single time I rolled a 3, I transferred it.
Yes.
So your actual average damage
it means
cost was like 1.
1 or 2. And if you're on a 1, you kept it.
You got like 14 rerolls out of 14 health, basically.
Yeah.
You just had to spend some fury along the way.
Pretty much.
Yeah, which was... now you get 6 or 7.
Yes. And so you have to make them count.
So it's almost double.
But I think one other thing that's helped her a lot is that she has better models to revive. Because before,
yes.
She didn't have... Before Tharn went that great, so...
Ravagers weren't ever something that I revived with her, though other people did.
Yep.
I think she can definitely play Devourer's Host very well, which is what they wanted. I think she's probably in the top 3 or 4 Devourer's Host casters.
Yep.
I think she could probably play the Meme Raptor pretty well. Rerolls galore for the Meme Raptor seems pretty good.
Seems fine to me.
But I haven't tried that.
So. I think the problem with the Raptor there is that she wants more fury so that she actually even can just spend it healing herself or doing
other
things.
Yeah, so you
like
take
that.
The Raptor and a Lesser, right?
Yeah,
you
probably
just kill the Raptor every turn and put 2 on the Lesser.
Probably have to, yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Morvana too, I think, if your opponent, like, if you have a... It comes down to actually what reason you have to play Tharn. Because for some people, it will be their primary list. And for some people, for others, especially a lot of Europeans, it will be their secondary because they're still riding the Kruger 2 train. Now, a lot of the reasons I know why you want a caster that isn't Kruger 2 in your pairing is to, like, smash through Dreamer because, you know, Pat Dumford is... actual cannibal Pat Dumford is out there ready to eat unsuspecting players.
Is he not playing Dreamer anymore?
I don't know.
I thought
he
started
sure
playing some other factions.
Well,
yeah,
he was playing Crucible Guard, but he was playing... Last I heard,
he's still
he was doing both.
No, he's... Yeah.
He took both to the last major tournament that I was aware of that I went to.
Okay.
And he played half of the tournament with Dreamer and half the tournament with random Crucible stuff that was out.
I'm pretty
sure. Brought to you by Patwatch.
Yep, Patwatch. Paying attention to Pat.
The only place to get your Pat news.
Yes.
Oh, no. I think he has a
also
podcast. Doesn't he have a podcast?
He probably does have a podcast.
Hotmail.com.
Okay.
Message him alongside Tomash. But yes, if you have a reason, and if your reason is deeps, and it is a reason why a lot of people are looking at Tharn, because, look, if you want damage, then damage is quite a nice thing that you have in your Tharn list. Right? If that's the case, then you're probably better served by throwing in Iona or Wormwood or even Mosar, frankly.
Her Lord of the Feast is good, like, pretty damn good, but difficult to use because she needs to be in range to give him rerolls, and that's kind of hard.
Yeah.
But he gets the rerolls all the time on the shot, which is nice.
Yes.
And Carnivore plus rerolls on the attacks is decent.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
The change to Carnivore was nice. It's a quality of life change. It's a good change.
Very much so. I think more to, you just got to get back in the groove of it, and you got to have... It's kind of like Harpy. Like, a lot of times, like, Harpy is an amazing caster, and you might just leave her at home because the matchups you're wanting to target, Harpy will not be good into because mm-hmm. they'll have the anti-healing, or in this case, in Morph 2's case, like the RFP, and you want the damage to really get through that you just won't have otherwise.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to Tanith. All right, look, next is Tanith, and I don't think any of us really want to get into it that much. Do not play her in Call of the Wild, apart from the fact that you might have to play in the Call of the Wild, because...
The fact is you should play in Call of the Wild for some fucking reason, but at the same time, Call of the Wild is like, why would you bother?
She gets Loki. That's probably the only thing I will say that is strongly positive for her, and she's the only caster that can make Reeves work.
Yeah.
Can't you get Loki in any Tharnless, though?
Yeah, but it's really hard. It's really hard.
Why have I never taken him?
Because you take Getarix.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Getarix is better.
He has to compete with Getarix, and he better. Really needs like a strength buff.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, look, Tanith...
I don't hate her, but I've never been able to make her work.
Tanith kind of plays models that aren't in vogue to start with, and then is also being left behind. And it's very difficult to see her actually getting changes. Because she is a battle box caster. Like, her feat actually doesn't work with Call of the Wild because of the fact it reduces the cost by to 1, meaning that you
Which means it cancels out the benefit of the theme.
Correct. So a bunch of things like your free sprint you get in, like, with your Warpwolf Stalkers now are suddenly not free, which is just ridiculous.
She does have Admonition. Admonition is a pretty good Getarix. Just saying.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to...
Uma is a good Getarix.
Una 1. I mean, Uma 2. Although all the Unas are real good Unas.
Una 3.
God damn it.
That's just
She's on a Meme Raptor.
She's on a Storm Raptor. That's Kruger 2. Oh, yes.
Well, no, Kruger 3 is on a Blighted Meme Raptor. She's on a legit Meme Raptor.
Can she be on a double-headed Meme Raptor?
Maybe yeah, that's Kruger 2.
That is pulled by multiple Scarspell Griffin that are flying.
Gross. I don't like that at all.
It's a cloud of Griffins.
It's a murder of Griffins. Thank you very much.
That would be crows. I don't think they're crows.
Hmm. They should
be I think gross. They're eagles.
How about a gyre?
A gyre. Like
Falcons, yeah, a gyre of Griffins.
Ooh, done. All right, we'll take that. Anyhow, Una 2.
Okay. Una 3 on a gyre of Falcons. You heard it first.
Una 2 was...
I don't even know what that would look like.
A caster. Garbage. Complete garbage.
Maybe not.
Anyhow,
Una Depends 2. How they did it.
It's expensive.
You know the classic, like, roll of smoke or float? So you do that with, like, Griffins all around it the whole
so,
way up.
So you know what it is.
And then it's just the most doing the sex face on the top of
the sex Trident, face.
But just the floating Trident. In the air.
So what you're saying is it's the most expensive model PP will ever produce.
Sure. I mean, we can kitbash one. I've got, like, 9... I've got 11 scars.
So it's basically like, what was it, Severius 2, except instead of stepping on people, it's stepping on birds and yes. a whole flock of birds.
But I'm thinking that they're 5 griffins, and I'll name one of them fire, one of them water, one of them earth, one of them air, one of them heart, mm-hmm. and then she can just be Captain Planet.
And Don't she know. Can fight, and she can face against Sebestro, who's Correct. Captain Pollution.
Captain Pollution! Oh my god, that is
the Legion caster.
Right, we interrupt the circle caster that, yeah, definitely. Sylvester is Captain Pollution.
Kruger 2. Kruger 3.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Kruger 3 is Captain Pollution.
Anyway. Uno 2. So, Uno 2 is pretty much the caster that...
Still a good caster.
When Mark 3 was, like, sort of coming along, and we were like, oh, you know, here's, like, the upgraded forms of all the juniors. Here's, like, Jakes and Malakov and Durant, and they're all kind of
Horrible.
Under the curve. They're like, they have some like bright sparks, but they're very clearly under the curve, kind of, you know, conservative designs.
And that's because like, it all went into one caster.
Correct. Well, it was like one caster.
Your powers combined.
It was like one caster with
Captain Planet.
Yes.
Yeah. So you had like Fianna 2, who was quite decent. Horgul 2, who was a bit air, well, but you know, still had decent rules.
Zedesh, very survival.
Fianna and Zedesh, both quite playable, and then you're like, Una 2, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah, they fucked that up.
Yeah.
I often wonder what would have happened had she gone through CID, as we know the CID process. Because they would have proposed all of the things that she ended up with in week 3, and everybody would have looked at them and gone, what? No. And then she would have come out with them all, and everybody would have been like, holy shit!
No, she would have come out with it, but it would be tuned down or something Maybe. To that, some respect. Or, like, she would have gained... she'd have traded Black Penny on her gun, which I found out just now that she has, for, yes. like, I don't know, more pushing.
She's a caster that can play in multiple themes. She is most easily fit into Call of the Wild because she wants to take a decent battle group because her feet is completely keyed to flying things. And her general abilities on her card are keyed to flying creatures, to griffins specifically, basically.
So you need a flying unit.
No, because they're keyed to light war-based.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, it
otherwise
is.
Your unit would have sprint, which would be really weird.
Actually, no, not quite. Friendly faction models with flight get
that's
the speed
the
buff.
That's the...
Speed buff.
Yes.
The second part of it is only that your light war-beast get to fly over and ignore melee attacks.
So now go to our actual card.
Right. Yes, okay, fine.
Which has two things on it, both of which are tied specifically to...
I'm just saying, so if you had a unit of Flying Tharn, that Flying Tharn unit would be Death 15.
You need flying druids.
Druids on clouds.
That's, no, just
druids on eagles is actually doable.
Mm.
That's possible.
Anyhow,
if they'd done that instead of what they currently have, that would have been a lot better. Even if they were the same rules, I'd still probably play them because they look really cool. Yeah. So
and they'd get you to Mordor on time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
wouldn't have to do all that shit.
So you get plus one to go first.
Yeah. Anyway, so
you can tell, guys, we're reaching.
So Una 2 is. Very good in Call of the Wild, very easy to build in Call of the Wild. I think you can build her for almost all of the other themes because Hand of Fate is a in good spell.
Oh man, I so want to see her in Bones. Do it!
Okay, probably not Bones.
But Hand of Fate on Sentry Stones is pretty good.
Hand of Fate on Wild...
Swapping her from one Sentry Stone to the other Sentry
can
Stone
she
is
take
pretty good.
Any War Beasts?
No.
So
that
no.
would make it difficult. You'd have to play 29 points down?
I don't think that's legal.
No, that's not legal.
Oh, no, she can take any war beast. She just
yeah, I think she can, right?
Yeah. Because she takes
only Una 1 that can't.
She takes a Gorax, because she needs the Gorax to give primal to her
Griffins. Una 2, they got rid of all of that. It's only Una 1.
Yep.
So, yeah, she can play. You could play her in Bones if you wanted to. I wouldn't,
do
but
it.
You could. So she has Windwall and... Hand of Fate and Mirage and
all
Twister.
Yeah.
All doable.
And a gun.
Yeah.
And a gun
Twister
is
Twister on a World Warden.
Well,
yeah.
The best thing that with Twist. The best
mind
thing.
Mind blown. I don't even understand what that means. Oh, you mean the World Warden's casting?
Yeah.
I thought you meant you were centering it on your World Warden. I Twister my World Warden.
Oh,
twice.
Oh, yeah.
Much
more likely, though, is you Twister on your wall, your sentry stones, your mannequins, and then you get a cloud wall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you just Hand of Fate both sentry stones and call it a day.
How would you do both?
You swap it?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she probably doesn't play in Bones. That's fair.
Yes.
She can easily play in Secret Masters if you wish. And she's probably pretty good there. You can play her in...
Especially
when
she gets her Eagle Druids.
Yes.
But again, in all of the themes, you are fighting the fact that you really want to spend more than the 35... Like, more than the 15 points worth of extra battle group, and probably you're pushing the limit on the 35. So if you're playing her in Devourer's Host, you're probably playing with her battle group plus 35 points of Beasts, and then 40 points of Tharn with two solos.
Yep.
Which is okay... But you lose one of the key benefits for Tharn, which is having enough of them that they definitely get there.
Yeah.
And
her,
two full units.
Her big draw card is Hand of Fate, outside of the fact she has, Griffin spam.
Yes.
I
draw
also,
card, if you don't play any Griffins, it's Hand of Fate.
Yes. I also think that one of her other draw cards is that because she can make Griffins work by far the best out of any of them, it means that you don't have to worry about your battle group. Your battle group will always, generally speaking, do work.
Yeah.
So you can just take a gaggle of Griffins... I'm assuming that's their collective tap now.
We're sticking with Gyre.
A Gyre of Griffins, then. A jar of Griffins. It's just a jar of Griffins.
The old Griffin jar.
You just take a jar of Griffins, and it means you don't have to take garbage beasts like, say, Purebloods and Ferals and Stalkers.
That's
and
it.
Other,
she runs a pretty good Pureblood.
And other overcosted trash. And instead, you can just have a bunch of lights and use that to add a bit more DPS to your farm build. Whether that's actually necessary or not is a completely different question. She does also suffer from the fact that Call of the Wild is just not as fantastic and that her feet is actually kind of a shit now.
Yeah.
Because it used to be not
bananas.
Shit.
It took a real big hit. It went from being one of the best, if not the best, feet in the game to very mediocre. All right, I'm fucking done with Una. Let's move on to Wormwood.
All right, fine. I guess we'll round it up with Wormwood. The most least mobile caster in the game.
And the most.
And the most. And the least. Wormwood,
I mean, is deceptively mobile for a tree.
For a tree.
He's had deceptively mobile. But he just learned how to use it.
Oh, man, it's perfect. So, Wormwood, Treatment, Fate, and Cassius, the Fate...
Oathkeeper.
Oathkeeper.
Breaker?
Keeper.
Keeper.
Psh. Current Keeper. If he breaks it, I guess he'll become Cassius II, the Oathbreaker, but he'll be the shittest solo ever because he won't be a caster anymore.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he'd be buried in the dirt.
Yes. Alright, so Wormwood, Tree of Fate.
Isn't he a corpse at this point?
Kind of.
There's still meat there, I think.
He's living. He has a soul. It definitely doesn't say he's soulless. So
so you get the soul when he dies.
Or does the tree get it?
Yeah, well, the tree.
Well, the tree usually gets it.
There you go.
Alright. Wormwood, Tree of Fate is a bit of a janky caster. Unfortunately for everyone involved, he is also an incredibly strong caster. Like, there's just a lot of good stuff going on for your immobile tree that's serving as your wall caster. For everyone back in memory lane, this was a caster that Dark Guidance, well, had to endure for a long time, and probably most of the War Machine community at large. Wormwood is basically defined by his spell list and the fact that he has access to one of the best arc nodes in the game, in the form of Cassius. He's also defined by the fact that sometimes, randomly, you just get chumped, Cassius dies, your stones break, and then you're stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Then you're the only caster in the game that literally cannot move.
You can...
and pray to God you did not put yourself outside the kill box before that happened.
Or hope that somebody doesn't have TK and puts you there. Yes.
Fun fact, I have seen that happen.
Yep, I've seen it happen. I've seen Cassius and the stones die top of one.
Oh, like, God, yeah. Like
bottom tomorrow,
of one,
sorry.
Bottom of one, oh, okay. While the tree is still not out of the
kill box. Yep.
No, I actually just wanted to, like, sit at the 12-inch line and then somebody to kill those two and then TK.
Yeah.
Call it a day. And then just
see ya!
TK and then retreat.
It's time to play the scenario game.
Important things for Wormwood. One, he has a very good feat in and of itself. It's a very strong defensive feat. It's a pain in the butt to deal with scenario-wise, and for some armies, it can almost be game over. It's a real hard feat to deal with if you don't have a way to see through forests.
Well, like we talked about earlier with Devourer's Host, it's like it's trees, which very few things in the game actually can deal with in terms of line of sight. Yep. It's like a handful. People who have Tree Walker, which is mostly Circle.
Circle and like two models in Kador.
Then there's the guys who have Bird's View, so I think that's two casters in Rhett. There's anybody who has Mage Sight, which is already pretty rare, and generally speaking. And then, like, a couple other odd rules here and there. Yep.
Like, if you have enough threat range and Pathfinder, you can get there. But
technically, but then it's janky
if
shit.
You put a pillar in the middle of it and then charge your pillar.
Well.
Again, Circle.
And you can get your boundless charge going.
So, it's an interesting one because, for him, he kind of accidentally helps that. So, in his base kit... Forests are a thing that Tharn like, so his feat just does extra things for them that it doesn't do for other models. It gives them +2 def in the case of Ravagers.
Tactician.
It gives them Tactician. It gives them the ability to still see through it, even though their opponents can't see
through it. More importantly, it gives you the ability to feat and still activate models after
Wormwood.
You can
still use your army.
It's really bad when you activate Wormwood.
And then you're like,
then you realize that your entire army has... real big problems. Yeah. Like, your wolves cannot have to
it's
now
better
run.
Now. It's better now, because now they have Pathfinder, whereas before they did not.
Yeah.
And there is nothing sadder than feeding and then going to activate Getrix and realizing you can only walk for
run six. I have also, like, this has to be said as well. Like, Wormwood is an awkward caster. I think it's part of how...
It's deliberate.
It's very deliberate. He is a bit of a very high skill cap caster, and honestly also a caster very much worth getting your reps in and practicing. So therefore, I think your best list with him is 100% dependent on
you.
He does have a bit of a, like, the themes don't really fit me quite nicely. Like, while he is excellent in Devourer's Host, he has a problem in that theme in that he doesn't have easy access to souls unless he brings in some trash from outside. And
You can take a unit.
I've seen them do that.
I've seen first turn sacrifice.
I don't think you need to.
That means you get to sit at armor 23 in the middle of the opponent's army and just go.
You can. Yes.
You can.
I guess you're not killing me this turn.
But you could just take more Werkthorn anyway and wait for them to die. But it is still a problem. Like, you have to balance it really carefully.
And you can't take War Wardens.
Yes. And with, like, Bones of Orboros, he definitely can take Wall Wardens and Wall Weirds.
He has even less access to souls.
Yeah. He can sort of make up for that, but the fact that Wall Wardens can cast Stranglehold for him, so he doesn't have to, and he do other kind of cool stuff, and also make forests.
He can bring a unit of fun people.
He can bring any of Mercs or something,
stupid. And then you can also bring a Swamp Cover Chef if you want. For an extra point.
Yeah, your Swamp Cover Chef is going to happily
lucky,
donate.
Lucky bonus dude.
For 1 point.
One soul.
That you sometimes need.
Yep, exactly.
Sweet, sweet.
And also
a guy
that sometimes just contests flags or backstabs someone to death.
Or scores flags.
Or does both.
Yeah, sometimes
does
both.
But yeah, like, he has, even since the start of Mark III, he's had some of the best Sentry Stones, so, like, why ruin that? Why not just keep the Sentry Stone train rolling? Between the Sentry Stones making forests and him having a spell that makes forests, he can just make huge walls. That's just really, really strong. I think, generally speaking, Wormwood is an enabler, and his biggest strength is that he delivers your army. He has other cool things, like the fact he has fucking Hellmouth.
He has a damage buff as well.
He has a damage buff?
Curse of Shadows, pretty good.
He runs with Blood Pack really well.
I was getting to that. He has one of the most dangerous Bridges on Calls, because Call can, generally speaking, survive getting Hellmouth multiple times. And so you can have Call just end up on a heavy. Like, you only really, let's be honest, you only really need to Hellmouth something once to get there.
You definitely don't want to tag Bridget.
No. But Bridget can run to provide the gang.
Yes.
But even Bridget just surviving by herself and plonking shots through, like, her feet is just still very good. This is a lot going on there with Wormwood, but it comes down to also just how well you can do it and your experience with Cassius, because there's a lot of bad Wormwood games. But there's also just a lot of Wormwood games where your opponent, like, if your opponent doesn't have the tools for it, as you guys said, you just are kind of fucked.
Yep.
You have to have a plan for it if you are in that spot, but sometimes the answer might just be to bend over. Because...
No, just bait him for strangleholds.
True.
Just go like, oh, it'd be a real shame if this heavy got stranglehold, or this one. What if you tried for both? Who knows? Maybe you'll get them both.
Indeed. Yeah. So, by the way,
and then
what
does.
Is your
and then you're sad.
You
can't, and you're like, well, I was going to lose anyway.
If I present this card to you, what is your least favorite spell on Wormwood's card here? Is it this one here at the bottom?
No, I love Stranglehold. It's a great spell.
When
it's 100%
works.
Reliable. Works all the time. Never costs you games. That's what I love about that spell. It's reliable to just come through in a clutch.
Orbit's reliant on Stranglehold.
Yeah. It's a tournament winner. That's what that spell is.
I mean, that is true. It is a tournament winner.
Oh, it's
until it's not.
Yes. No, I have a well-documented dislike of Stranglehold. It is a good spell, but it is a pain-in-the-ass spell as well. But the rest of his kit is great.
Yes.
So he is a good caster. He's an interesting caster to play. He is an entertaining caster to play, because sometimes stupid shit happens.
Yes.
Well, I remember even Mark II, you were like playing him just to see if you could get him to work, because back then he was not quite the powerhouse he is now.
He's considered good, but he was.
He was still decent.
He was decent.
His main problem, I think, was he didn't work against Legion, and that was.
His problem was he needed 5 souls. Now he only gets 3.
Yeah, true.
Making 5 souls happen a turn was a lot harder. Also, he was Magic 6 then.
And he's now
Fury
Magic
6.
Yeah, but
Fury
he's now...
7 is a big difference. You can hit spells with Fury 7.
Yeah, well, more.
So before Stranglehold also missed as often.
Missing Hellmouth was my biggest problem with Cassius in Mark 2.
Oh, I remember.
It was like, you're like, I can do 2 Hellmouths a turn, motherfucker. Miss. Well, shit.
So, the Hellmouth missed. Yeah. The Hellmouth, I needed to set up my second Hellmouth to get my heavy onto your heavy.
Oh, it wasn't even for that. It was just for the attrition side. Where, like, you're playing for the double Hellmouth. And you're like, Hellmouth that guy, roll snake eyes. Hellmouth that guy, roll snake eyes. Fuck! Okay.
Goddamn, I'm bad at
pass turn.
Yes. Oh, dear. I think... I think that's a wrap. Like, anyway, just get over Wormwood's awkwardness, and you probably have a good time.
It's getting late. He's a top 5 caster for at least both the important themes.
Figure out where you want.
I think it's worth mentioning, now that we're here, that the current ADR we're going into January for Circle is Iona, Kruger 2, Wormwood, and something that doesn't matter.
And it's not Grail.
And your two.
It's Mosar, I think, actually.
It might be. And then the themes you can take are Devourer's Host and.
Bones?
No.
It's Secret Masters.
Yeah, it's Secret Masters.
Oh, great. You're
which means you Kruger two Secret Masters, like good players.
No,
it means you just one list Iona. Devourer's Host. That seems like the straightforward answer to that question.
But if you had to pair it, you might as well. You would Kruger 2 Secret Masters.
If you pair it with Kruger 2 Secret Masters to ruse them into thinking that you were like a net dagger.
And so that if they happen to bring Signar, you're like...
Yeah,
people play Signar?
People play Signar in the Year of Our Lord
2018. But you probably don't want to play Iona into a good Signar list.
That's fair.
Yep. It's probably not terrible, actually, but it wouldn't be her best matchup.
I mean, it wouldn't be like a slam dunk.
It would be a lot easier.
Yes, definitely a lot easier. Anyhow, I think that's a wrap. Well, Circle was a long and complicated faction, so we gave you a long and complicated cast. And then we didn't talk about the longest and complicatedest of casters, because we couldn't be bothered.
Because that's Tamasha's job.
Yeah.
God, how long would this podcast have been if we had talked about Kruger 2?
Forever and a half. I'm glad that Tom wasn't on, unfortunately. I wanted him on to talk about meme raptors, but that sadly was not the case.
That would have been another hour.
Yep, exactly.
Just on meme raptors.
Meme raptors alone. Anyhow,
if you derpy turkey, velocichicken, what?
Velocichicken? That's my new favorite. Velocichicken has no relationship to the name of the thing or the activities of the thing. You took out the only part of Velociraptor that was related to the actual bird and replaced it with chicken.
I'm really tired. As we can tell.
That's a wrap.
And does Colin have a song? That's a wrap. Do you have a song, Colin?
No?